I'd like to acknowledge the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet. Also, I'd like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who may be present this morning. Just a quick reminder for those in the public gallery, as is tradition, we advise you of public conduct at our meetings under Section 32 of our standing orders. For those members in the public gallery, you must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make an audio or video recording or take any photographs. Remain quiet. You must remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Do not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with the person present. Be suitably dressed. Turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements, and I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period as the chairperson decides, and this period may include future meetings. I haven't been advised of any leaves of absence this morning, councillors, so we'll go straight to our devotional segment and welcome member of the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, Reverend Stephen Rothery from Cleveland Uniting Church, to lead us in a brief devotional segment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. So it's Christmas time, and almost Christmas time, and as such I thought I'd bring a passage from the Gospel of Matthew. This is reading from the Message translation. So the birth of Jesus took place like this. His mother Mary was engaged to Joseph. Before they came to the marriage bed, Joseph discovered that she was pregnant, but it was by the Holy Spirit, even though he didn't know that. Joseph, chagrined but noble, determined to take care of things quietly so Mary would not be disgraced. While he was trying to figure out a way out of his situation, he had a dream. God's angel spoke to him in that dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, don't hesitate to get married. Mary's pregnancy is spirit conceived. God's Holy Spirit has made her pregnant, and she will bring a son to birth. And when she does, you, Joseph, will name him Jesus." That is, God saves. "Because he will save his people from their sins." And this would bring the prophet's embryonic sermon to full term. "Watch for this. A virgin will get pregnant and bear a son. And they will name him Emmanuel." That is Hebrew for "God with us." And when Joseph woke up, he did exactly what God's angel commanded in the dream. He married Mary, but did not consummate his marriage until she had had the baby. And he named the baby Jesus. So I thought I'd keep it simple and concise this morning. And in all the talk of Christmas, in all of the talk of the life of Jesus, the character Joseph, the father of Jesus, is an interesting one. And this is not Joseph. This is not the same Joseph who had the Technicolor dream coat in the Old Testament, and that's an easy confusion for people to make. But this Joseph is interesting in that he spoke no words. We hear nothing spoken from Joseph. We have no recording of anything he said, but we hear in this verse and the ones that follow that Joseph obeyed. We have several instances where angels, God's messengers, would appear to God, Joseph, and give him instructions, tell him things to do, and he obeyed. Joseph obeyed, he obeyed, he obeyed. And then he exits the story. After these opening chapters, we don't hear anything of Joseph anymore. We don't hear anything about him as an adult. And so what we have is the image of this person who obeyed and took on a responsibility, particularly around in their cultural setting in the first century, one that would have been particularly shameful to him and his family, to be found with a wife-to-be who was already pregnant and a child that wasn't his. Yet he obeyed. Joseph, as a person in this story, didn't even get to see what his sacrifice would lead to. He didn't get to see the fulfillment of what would come afterwards. And the best guess of scholarship is that he died sometime before Jesus grew up. But for us, I think there is a reminder here that there is virtue in seeking to work diligently on matters where, even though we may not see the outcome, that they can make a difference. Joseph was part of a story that changed the world, and a part of the story that we continue to retell to inspire hope and to inspire change. The challenge I think that has for the council and anyone who's in elected office is that you may work diligently on the matters of governance, especially those that aren't glamorous, and especially those for which the payoff may not come for a long, long time, but doing so in the knowledge that this is important work, that in doing so you can make a difference in the lives of individuals and for our city over the long term. As I was coming in, I was reflecting on the photos on the wall that had all of the different councillors from years past. And just reflecting to myself, again, as someone who came from an engineering background and having to work with a lot of, let's say, projects that you had inherited, just being mindful of the hard work and the diligence that had gone in before me and that for all of you, and being mindful that is something that we steward and a responsibility that we carry. I think the challenge for us who are here, for those who are in the gallery, is that as citizens and voters, that we don't become fixated on the words and the flashy things that may distract us at election times. That we can take seriously the hard work that our public servants do, and that we cannot give in so quickly to people taking credit for work that started long before them. That we cannot simply ignore that which our elected representatives do, even though it may not deliver the instant results that are easy to market. So I think there's something here to remember for all of us in this story, in the obedience and the humility of Joseph. So let's pray. Lord God, we just thank you that in Christmas you remind us that there is hope, and that you remind us that irrespective of where we are in faith, of the virtue of seeking to serve, seeking to be obedient, and seeking to work even in situations where we may not receive the recognition or even see the results of our labour. So God, help our counsellors to continue to be humble stewards of that responsibility that we have entrusted into them. And God, as citizens in this city, help us to continue to work for the common good of our city. Help us to continue to work with those who we have given this special responsibility, and help us not to be sucked in to easy hype, easy words, and seemingly instant results. Help us in all of these things to seek to be those people who embody hope and love and justice in all that we do. In Christ's name we ask this prayer. Amen. Thank you.
Christmas. Councillors, we are now up to item 4 on our agenda, which is recognition of achievement. And not only is today the last general meeting for 2016, but also the last general meeting for two of our dedicated staff members who I would now like to duly recognise for their contribution to this organisation and thereby to the city as a whole. As I said, I'd like to pay tribute and say farewell to two wonderful servants of Redlands. Today, Nick Clark, General Manager, Organisational Services, and Luke Wallace, Group Manager, Community and Cultural Services, are attending, as I said, their very last Redlands City Council general meeting, and they're holding back the tears, I can see. Yes, we are. Nick will be retiring later this month after joining Council in 2009 and serving as a highly qualified, highly regarded and very capable general manager. I know I echo the sentiments of all councillors when I wish Nick all the very best in his retirement. For those of you in the public gallery who haven't met Nick or know about Nick, he has an extensive background in executive and managerial roles both in public and in private sectors in Australia and in the UK. including as a Director of Local Government Managers Australia-Queensland at state and national levels and as a Queensland President. A former Chief Inspector... A former Chief Inspector in the London Metro, Nick came to the Redlands after several years with Brisbane City Council. In his 7 years here, he has served in a number of positions, including Acting CEO, and in recent years as a Disaster Coordinator. Nick's service to the Redlands, local government and those in need across Queensland has long extended beyond the call of duty, earning recognition through a prestigious Fellowship of Local Government Managers Australia-Queensland. He has long been recognised as an inspirational leader, a man with compassion... Thank you. No, well, that's right. We have the standing orders last to withdraw those items if necessary. Thank you. Nick's service to the Redlands local government and those in need across Queensland has long extended beyond the call of duty, earning recognition through a prestigious Fellowship of Local Government Managers Australia-Queensland. He's long been recognised as an inspirational leader, a man with compassion for others. He was inspired by the work of the charity Angel Flight when president of LGMA. Becoming committed to the cause of helping struggling isolated families overcome the tyranny of distance when in need of specialist medical treatment. That passion resulted in two epic 10,000 kilometre fundraising flights in a tiny plane with his co-pilot Mike Levy. This followed a flight in 2009 that raised $68,000 for Make-A-Wish Australia. That hands-on attitude and his high-level expertise in emergency management have been of immeasurable worth to the Redlands when, as local disaster coordinator, he led the city's multi-agency strategic response to significant life-threatening emergencies. His record is that of an outstanding achiever and a mentor within local government during a period of significant change and very much a doer determined to make a difference through action. Nick's influence on our organisation has been both significant and positive. His role in leading our business transformation and advancing our corporate goals has been substantial, and he has overseen tremendous advancements in IT, governance and the Redlands' capacity to respond to disasters, which is really second to none in South East Queensland, if not the state. Someone that's worked alongside Nick for a period of this time is Luke Wallace, and he's been something of a man Friday. He's a go-to guy. Since joining us from the Gold Coast 8 years ago, he has been an outstanding officer during his time with Council in two group manager roles, initially in corporate governance and more recently taken up the challenges of a community and cultural services role. Luke is literally a man that each and every one of us look up to. He's been a good friend to all councillors and to his colleagues and a great source of information and encouragement to each of us. Our loss will be Gold Coast City Council's gain as the local boy returns home. He assures us he will be taking a little bit of Redlands with him, and we know where to find him. As Group Manager Corporate Governance, Luke and his team delivered the last two corporate plans, setting Council's strategic direction and refreshing the organisation's mission, vision and values. If I could just add a personal note, with the last corporate plan, I have never seen the whole organisation so engaged on that journey, and it's really quite a credit to what was achieved through Luke's leadership. As part of his role, he was charged with responsibility for delivering a complete review of Council's local laws to bring them into line with the state government's model local laws, and councillors still have the scars to prove it after probably numerous hours of debate, but simplifying it for the broader community so they have a better understanding of how local laws improves and impacts our city. Along the way, he has delivered a complete review of Council's formal meeting structures and processes, overseen implementation of major changes to the Local Government Act across Council, ensuring legislative compliance with the peak local government legislation, and managed the majority of Council's corporate governance functions over 8 years, maintaining the highest possible standards in areas like risk management, insurance, workers' compensation, right to information and information privacy, corporate performance management, operational planning, delegations, and policy development. He worked obviously 24/7 to achieve all of that in the time he's been here. Importantly, Luke has managed Council's relationship with the Quandamooka Yulubarabi Aboriginal Corporation that we refer to as KIAC, advancing the delivery of the Redland City Council KIAC Indigenous Land Use Agreement. And might I say that is a first for South East Queensland for a council to have achieved that. So that was certainly a big task that will leave a legacy for this city and the Indigenous people of North Stradbroke Island. Luke has served on the Redlands Investment Corporations Board since March 2016. And if I could just sum up by saying that both Luke and Nick will be dearly missed by all councillors and council officers, and we wish them all the best in the next chapter of their lives. We'll have a chance to acknowledge them a little bit later as well. We've got a little certificate for them, etc. But I just wanted everyone to please put your hands together in appreciation for the service of Luke and Nick. Councillors, back to the agenda. Item 5 is receipt and confirmation of minutes. I need a mover and a seconder for that motion, if I may. Moved Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Hughes. Any items of correctness, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. Item 4.2 at our last meeting was Deborah Corbett Hall, Chief Financial Officer, presentation of a 10-year PIN. And we all know Deborah as one of our most proper and precise and efficient CFOs. Thank you very, very much. In the report, it's referred to Deborah as Deb, and just as a point of order, we know that Deborah is Deborah, and I'd like to see if we could amend her name correctly. Thank you. With a mark of respect.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. It's not a material change, so I'll just make sure that's noted in the minutes, if I may. So it's noted. With that change, we have a mover and a seconder. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. There are no items outstanding from minutes of previous general meeting. Public participation. I haven't been advised of any members of the public that wish to address Council today. Is there anyone there that has come along to address Council? Ms. Murphy, would you like to come forward? And while you do, I just need to get a mover and seconder that we adjourn for a... I'll make it a 10-minute session, if I may, to allow members of the public to address Councillor matters of public interest. Move Councillor Tolte, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Kay, I think you know the drill. Name and address, organisation, if you represent one, if you could just state those. And I won't read you the drill because okay. I know that you've heard it before. So.
Okay. Thanks, Mayor Karen. My name is Kay Murphy and I live at Thornlands. I'll be very brief because I can see you've got a great agenda on this morning, so I'll try and cut this out. Most people are very aware of the concerns of groups and residents in the Redland City regarding the development of high-rise and, in general, development in the city. Some would like to exclude people coming to the city altogether, even though they were welcome to live here with development of the Shire. Redlands is very different to the 60s, 70s and 80s that was. Thank goodness. Personally, I believe we need a mixture of homes. However, the majority should be for child-friendly blocks so children can play and learn ball skills in their backyard with family and friends. The experts tell us our children are losing many skills you and I learnt in our backyard. I guess I'm just an old-fashioned girl. I would also like to comment on six little words made by a councillor at the last meeting. Those words triggered a memory for me from a few years ago, and I would like to read a letter that was written to the Courier Mail from a resident in Logan City who was answering an item that had been in this particular newspaper previously. This person, obviously a passionate and concerned resident at this time for their area. I'll just read it to you if I can. While I applaud the passion shown for the koala, I wonder if the same compassion would be afforded to the koala if the residents of Redland Shire had their homes and schools under threat of removal to make way for medium high-rise density units. Logan City Council currently have draft plans for Logan Central, which include the closure of two schools. Homeowners living out of the Logan Central area have their streets included in these plans. New development has been stopped in Park Ridge and Bar Scrub. This is all part of the SEQ regional plan. It appears animal rights are more relevant than human rights. I have been appalled at some of the personal attacks reported in the Courier-Mail directed toward landowners in the Thornlands area recently. Also, a comment suggesting culling the human birth rate to allow for koala habitat. Be careful what you wish for in the Redlands. It could be you next instead of the koala, and it's signed by the person from Logan. This letter to the editor in March 2010 says it all. This resident warned us quite clearly, and so now here in Redland City, we are where this resident was 6 years ago, with high rise and small lots, and the breaking up of suburban blocks. Crazy, really crazy. It is inevitable that Redland City will grow. Is it not possible to do it right? I thank the councillor for the few words, "Be careful what you wish for," that triggered this memory for me. In closing, I wanted to wish you all, councillors, staff, and all those people I have spoken to through the council for the time that I've been coming here, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and a safe one. I also like to wish those councillors and people who may share their Christmas with their church community a very blessed one. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. Anyone else wanting to address council this morning? If not, I'll take a mover and second that we resume meeting proceedings. Move, Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Petitions and presentations. Councillors, I have been advised of a petition. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have before me a petition from residents regarding Thornside Mobile Home Park. So I just want to acknowledge that the petition expresses the views of residents of the mobile home park, and there are ongoing discussions between council and the owner of the park that's raised some consternation for them. The petition addresses some of those things, and there's some uncertainty in their minds about the way forward. There's a letter that has been drafted by council officers in discussion with the owner of the caravan park and myself, as we've continued to have discussions to bring some clarity, and that will be delivered to the residents either yesterday afternoon or today. So that's information that I think will help them. So if I can just note that this motion is that the petition is of an operational nature and it's to be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration. So can I just move that?
Moved, Councillor Bishop. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. I don't need you to talk to it because you already have.
I sort of went the wrong way around.
No worries, that's okay. Councillor Tolter, you also have a petition, I believe?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I have a petition to present from the residents of Vanstone Rise, Redland Bay, whose land is under a covenant registered as 71686092.
Have you got a motion there, Councillor?
Don't I have to move it before I talk to it or not?
We have no knowledge of the petition, so you'll need to move a motion that the petition be accepted and referred to the relevant Department of Council.
Okay.
So moved. Seconded for that, thanks. Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it now, Councillor Tolte?
I'm on. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I wanted to present this petition today. I actually received it about 2 months ago. The petitioners took up a petition because they believed that was the most best way to call attention to the issue that they were having. Since then, I'd like to thank council officers. They have worked with the residents. They have provided them information, and the residents have largely had either the issues resolved or have been given information as to how to proceed, which was more appropriate to their concerns than the presentation of a petition. But as they had taken up a petition and people had signed it, I felt that it needed to be registered and presented to council. So I have this petition. I'd like it to be officially recognised, but there is no action to be taken as far as I'm aware. Council officers have resolved it.
For the mover and second, if I just might make sure that motion is in effect correctly, we might just get the words up there that the petition be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration and a report brought to local government. Is that correct? Have I got that right? You want a report back to council?
I don't believe it's necessary, Madam Mayor. My communication with the residents is that they're happy with the information they've received from council already.
I'll just get that motion correct first. So the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to Chief Executive Officer for consideration. Are you happy with that, Councillor Tolte and Councillor Wendt-Boglari? Sorry, Councillor Elliott, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
On. Councillors, we only have four options. So the other option is the petition not be received. So they're one of the four that we have under the Act.
It'll just get a response that actually outlines that, councillors. Yep. Are you happy with that? All right. I'll put the motion in. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Order of business, councillors. We do have a couple of motions to accept late items and one to withdraw an item from the agenda. I'll start with 9.1. If I could get a motion to accept late item Red Hart Mining Lease be received and discussed as item 11.1.3. Moved Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Another motion for a late item, resolutions for Toondah Harbour Priority Development Area, Local Representative Committee, be received and discussed as item 11.1.4. Those mover and seconder for that. Move Councillor Boglari, seconder Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. I have another item, motion, which is a motion to withdraw item 11.3.5, which is the request to extend the relevant period for the biomass at Mount Cotton. As was discussed, that the applicant has asked for an extension and it's been granted, so as required under legislation. So can I just please get a mover and second that be withdrawn? Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 10, councillors, is your reminder. Sorry, councillor.
Can I ask just on that one, for the public's knowledge, since there seemed to be interest in it today, can we say to the period that we are extending it to?
Oh, I don't know what that is. I thought it was up to March, I think.
Yeah, I just want people to make sure that the public don't think we've extended it for the 4 years, that it is only until March.
No, this is just as to be considered as an item on council's agenda. So it's not actually the extension has been requested through the process, the DA process. It's actually just for it to be considered by council.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted that clarification for the gallery.
Item 10 is your material personal interest and conflict of interest, councillors, and a reminder under the Local Government Act 2009 that in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed in a meeting, you have a summary of that responsibility in your agendas, councillors. Councillors, we'll move straight on to our reports, 11.1.1, and that is our November 2016 monthly financial reports. Councillor Elliott, I believe that you will... Councillor Edwards is going to move that. My apologies. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
In view of the size of our agenda, I'll be very brief. We're basically tracking well. got good cash holdings at the moment, and although our capital works project is a million behind, I think it's probably the best it's tracked in many a year, so congratulations to the officers for keeping that on track.
Any speakers against? Question?
Just because we got the report a little bit late, I've had time to read the report but actually not go through this thoroughly. I was just wondering if Deb could give us a sum up. Deborah, sorry, could give us a sum up if that's all right. Thank you.
Deborah?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you to the councillor. Finance acknowledges the time frame of this report because there's only one general meeting in December. We apologise that there wasn't time for you to read and digest. So happy to talk through the figures. So Councillor Edwards alluded to the strong cash balance. So we're $161 million in cash holdings at the end of November. And we note that we've got in excess of $100 million that's constrained for a particular purpose. So we keep running those reserves so that there is accountability and transparency for our community. Those monies are held for particular purposes, as explained in the report. In terms of an operating position, we're reporting an operating surplus at the end of November that slightly exceeds the budget. And we know that we adopted a first budget review in November. So we've now brought our budget alongside the actual. So as every good business does, we've looked at our financials over the last few months and we've made adjustments to our budget in line with the legislation. In summary, we're hitting 10 out of the 11 KPIs with the asset sustainability ratio at that stretch target of the 90% still eluding us. So I think ones to watch probably depreciation. We've talked at length about the asset revaluations as at 30 June, and we know that most of the assets on our balance sheet do depreciate, land being an exception and a couple of others, but most of the land, so when most of the assets depreciate, so when the asset value goes up, there's a corresponding increase in depreciation, so that's one that we're tracking. So from a finance perspective, we're reporting a strong financial position as at the end of November.
Any other questions or comments, councillors? I just might take an opportunity to congratulate the staff in achieving the targets, and obviously things are well on track and it's a good set of figures. I do actually also, though, want to put up a bit of a red flag. Obviously, if you look at our annual revised budget and our surplus deficit position, we are taking some hits when it comes to revaluation of assets and a change of position with our Redlands Investment Corporation, and I guess it is a flag. There will be decisions of council that could potentially give that a more southerly direction, and I just wanted to, you know, highlight the fact that we need to continue to be on the ball when it comes to managing those finances, so that we don't lose sight or end up in a situation where we've kind of gone a little bit further backwards. But it is a good set of figures. But it is timely for us to just have a look at that deficit position, because we have been managing surplus positions now for a number of years. As I said, some of those things are out of our control, but some of those decisions are in our control, and I just wanted to highlight that. With that, sum up, anyone? Sum up, Mark? Councillor Edwards? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item is 11.1.2, which is a review of our corporate policy application of water charges. Can I have a mover and seconder? Councillor Edwards, you happy to move that again? Moved, Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
No, it's all in the report there.
Any other questions, Councillor? It's pretty much housekeeping. Just for the public gallery's information, this is really just making sure that all our documents line up with the statements sit within them. So our revenue statement, et cetera, is now being reflected with the same words. So it is simply just housekeeping. If there are no speakers, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Thank you, councillors. We have a late item as discussed, which is the Red Heart mining lease. A mover and seconder, if I may, recommendation be accepted. Moved, Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Hughes. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
I kind of located here from memory, though. It's just an operational housekeeping matter.
Yeah, I'll get the CEO just to quickly outline why it is a late item and the content and context of it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Councillors, look, my apologies again. It is the last one and we have some exits from the business. As through there to, this is one of these little known companies that we hold. So if you read through there, we operate a gravel reserve out at German Church Road, and we do it as a quarry. Also, Council has a mining lease on that, which was granted to us, and as the Act states, we can't actually do that as a council, so we need an eligible person. So back in 1990, Red Hart was established. Now we have two directors on that, which are one which has departed, the other is about to depart, which was Nick Clark and Gary Suter. So this is really just to bring it up to speed so that we continue to act in that capacity. We haven't used the mining lease for a considerable period of time. The quarry is still in operation and still is run by council. And should we need to do mining, which is basically extracting clay for bricks and those type of things where it's processed, there will be royalties, etc., that are payable to the state. So hence why it's in our interest to maintain Red Hart, maintain that mining lease, even though it's been very quiet and doesn't appear in budgets and all those sort of things because we've yet to get any revenue. So that's simply it. We're just appointing two new ones, which is Louise Rassan and Deb Corbett-Hall, and we'll review that once we get the full complement of executives on and the new CEO as to whether those two executives in the longer term are more appropriate or we should go back to the organisational services in there. But we do need some directors on there, and Andrew Ross is our company secretary.
Any questions, councillors? Councillor Hughes and then Councillor Bishop. I'm allowing questions simply because it was a late item. So.
Just seeking clarification. Obviously, Nick and Gary, they were the directors. They held those positions and with staff changing, Louise and Deborah at the moment. Is that for a short term, or I would like to see it as a short term, to go back to the positions once staff are established? So potentially, is this a 6 month interim directorship, or is this going to be now ongoing?
At this point, it's ongoing, so, you know, I can't, as in anything, if you're about to have a new CEO, we're going to get some new people. It is probably most appropriate that the new GM of the operations group sits on that, so we may...
I felt that it was more that it was the position of the two directors that we had in line with their being the directors, because they held that position.
So typically... directors are chosen for their ability to direct the company and provide value and those type of things. So normally the operational group, which is in charge of running the quarry, it makes logical sense to have the GM of that, which is most capable on those. But we've made these two appointments. That's what we have as the operational. Is it temporary? Probably not. But that'll be up to the new CEO and those new GMs to decide whether that's most appropriate. And as the company's pretty much inactive and we're not doing anything, it is a bit, you know, rhetorical, if you like, as to the appropriateness. So there's not a lot of duties that are required through there.
Should we be reviewing this then in 12 months or something like that, or just letting it go for how long? Is it just open-ended?
I think it's been explained that it would be up to a CEO to decide as to how we move forward with it, but at this point in time, it's an appointment. Nick?
Sorry, Madam Mayor, just to... so that there's absolutely no confusion, it is your decision as councillors as to who goes on there, not the CEOs or ELTs.
That's correct. However, CEO would be bringing those recommendations to us, because we wouldn't be in any position to, be able to dictate the skills required for that, I wouldn't think so. Any other questions, Councillor Hughes? No? Councillor Bishop?
Thank you. Yes, just... first of all, clarity on the lateness and why did it come late?
Because we have two resignations and which would leave our board with no one in Red Hart.
Okay.
So technically we would be in breach of that without that. So this is why we brought it through.
Great. And second one is with the vacation of those two people having left the organisation, are there other... roles that we need to consider at this point in terms of other boards or panels or associations with...
associated motion, there's a recommendation coming up on another area.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion, councillors? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.1.4, the resolution for Toondah Harbour Prior Development Area Part 2 Local Representative Committee. Mover and seconder for the motion. Thank you. Move, Councillor Edwards. Seconded. Councillor Gleeson, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Very similar to the previous one, with Mr Clark moving on. There's a vacated position that needs to go to the LRC, which is the local representative committee of the Toondah Harbour and Wannon Creek, and the officer's recommendation is for Mr Bradley Salton, Group Manager of Project Delivery, to be appointed.
I'll just so what we're doing there, again, just so clarity before Nick jumps in to make sure, this is a recommendation from Council to the Deputy Premier, who has that choice to say yes or no. So we will forward off the CV, but we need to have your recommendation for that appointment. It ultimately is up to the State Government to accept that.
Any other questions, councillors? Councillor Bishop?
Yes, just checking if there are any other vacancies in any other boards or associated council vacancies that will come up as a result of the resignations that we need to consider at this point.
Madam Mayor, just the one that I can remember, and that is the role of the Redlands Local Disaster Coordinator. So under the Disaster Management Act, I have appointed Mike Lowback as the Acting Local Disaster Coordinator for such period until Council, by resolution, appoints my successor.
It doesn't require Council resolution.
No, the appointment of someone acting in the role is something delegated to me as the LDC under the Disaster Management Act, but the formal appointment of a permanent local disaster coordinator is by resolution of Council. And once all the pieces of the jigsaw are back in place, you'll make a decision as to who's the most qualified person to represent you and the community in that role.
I just wanted to just make sure that there are no other vacancies that we need to...
There is one other which will come up with Luke Wallace's resignation, which is the RIC directorship, and also with my departure in the new year, we'll also need to... Council will need to consider two new directors from Council officers to be placed on those, but at the moment we don't need to fill that one. We have a complement and a quorum of the board in RIC. So we would... I spoke to the chairman last week, and we'll wait until my date is set, and then you guys can decide as council the two new nominees for that.
That's great, thank you.
So just to be clear, that one of the reasons that we wanted to appoint that was it was a decision that we brought the local representative committee representative to today's because of the PDA status over areas that we wanted to make sure if any application had come forward that we would have our quorum of representatives on that committee. We don't anticipate that's going to be the case, but it was just in case. So the other items can be dealt with and don't put us in any awkward position by not doing that in the early instance. But we thought easier to do this today before the holiday break. Any other discussion? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Thank you. The next item, councillors, is the Redland City Events Strategy and Action Plan 2017-2022. I believe Councillor Hughes was going to move that item, and I've got a seconder in, Councillor Tolte. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes. Moving 11.2.1, our new strategy, Redland City Events Strategy and Action Plan 2017-2022. I move that report. Thank you.
Move, Councillor Hughes. Seconded. Councillor Tolte, you can speak to if you may.
Thank you. This is, as I said, a new strategy, and we have so much to offer here in our Redlands. We've got arts and culture. We've got a developing large range of national sports and events. This complements our Redlands City Tourism Strategy and Action Plan 2015-2020, and it's aimed at supporting existing events, which obviously we have a very, very full schedule at the moment, but we've got room for more. There are 19 actions in this report, and they're mostly funded with the existing council budget. And I think that it's special to note that we've got the formation of a red team, and this is for event organisers and relevant stakeholders from council to get together and agencies all together to discuss items and learn about how we can support and grow our city. Thank you.
Any questions? Any speakers against, firstly? No speakers against? I've got a couple of questions. Councillor Boglari and then Councillor Tolte.
Oh, not so much a question. Sorry, if I may just comment on it. I'd just like to thank the officers for the work. Redlands is pretty unique. You know, we've got a city of islands, we've got the conservation park of Moreton Bay, and we've also got bush. There's not many other towns or cities in Australia that has got as much to offer in their environment as Redlands actually has. What I particularly like about this strategy is that we're going to help the local guys too, not just bring in the outside people, because previously when one of my church groups wanted to have Christmas carols in the park, they couldn't because there was no power. At that stage, council did supply it, but one of the actual gaps that the officers have identified is that lack of some infrastructure. So it might only seem a little thing to put some water or power in a park, but that allows it to be activated, and it's not always the big guys we want here. We want those local churches and craft groups and schools also be able to hold events and do fundraising and bring our community together. So that excites me, is that support for the local people that is also included in this. And as Councillor Hughes mentioned, the new red team that's existed, some people that want to put on a market or something, they don't actually have the skill to get the permits and everything. They've got the skill to run the market, but not that pre-implementation stage. So I really encourage our residents to use that team. They're very valuable. I've used them several times myself to get the answers for groups. So I think that support in this document for our local people is absolutely so valuable. And like I said, we have got so much here to offer. I think Redlands is so unique. One of our priorities, you know, the Mayor is saying, is our branding. And these events will actually help us highlight everything that's great about Redlands and help us with our branding.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a comment also. I just wanted to commend the staff, the communications team, and particularly Kristen Banks and her team have brought together a very wide range of knowledge and skills, and we have all of that in-house, and we're very, very lucky to have those people working there. They have looked at this, it's comprehensive, and it's backed up by practical knowledge and skills. So I just wanted to commend the team for putting it together. Thank you.
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you very much. Likewise, our communications team extraordinary, and having an event strategy is a very welcome and important thing for the community, just so we can allow people to have an understanding about how to do events in our city. We've got a tremendous pack that allows residents to understand what is required of them when they want to do an event in the city that predates this, and I think that's a very important thing. A couple of things I'd just like to mention. First of all, I had a couple of questions in relation to the policy and just how we can make sure that it ties into the cultural community cultural development team, because obviously events are a big part of our city's identity, and there's a lot of people in the community who have a very close attachment to place, and events are a natural way for them to do things like have market stalls weekly. And I think as we get more of an understanding about those people doing those events, and we can enable them and support them in doing that, it's very important to tie in the community development, the arts as well.
Shall I get Tracy to respond to that point first?
Well, they've been tremendous at getting some feedback, and thank you, I appreciate that. That's good.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Yes, agree completely, and happy to report that the Strengthening Communities team are actually on the red team, which are one of the key pieces of this strategy to work through and make sure there is arts and culture, and culture is written throughout, and it's certainly something that we see as a major part of events.
Which is great, and I think as we move forward, bringing some extra clarity in terms of I've mentioned previously having Indigenous cultural heritage plans and strategies, just gives clarity to those people, because this is it sends a very important signal to people out in the world when they want to come to Redland City about how to behave when they're here, and I think that's an important one, and hopefully we can get some more movement in that space. I think that's going to be important.
I think it would be fair to say through Tracy that there were numerous stakeholders involved in pulling together this strategy, and I would have thought that The Quandamooka Festival played a part in that as well, so certainly there's been input from Quandamooka.
Absolutely, and as it should be, because we are the city that's the custodians for such an incredible culture, and an appreciation of that culture is something that other people shouldn't take for granted. It should be something that there's policy documents that help people understand how to adhere to those protocols, which our officers do know and do very well. So that's a tremendous thing as well. I want to also acknowledge the fact that we this gives council an opportunity to have a what's on portal, and gives us a really good opportunity to take all of the various projects that are happening around the city and centralise those in a way so we can make those things known. And one other thought is there's a whole movement in digital events and the way people are engaging with not just through social marketing, which is mentioned in the document, but things like apps and things that they can download. And I know those the comms team are fantastic at integrating those things. So just a few points, and thank you very much.
I think they've made good use of Pokemon Go while it was a fad, so I think there's great capacity in that team. Now, were there any other... Councillor Mitchell and then Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Mitchell first and then Councillor Gleeson. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, I'll try and be brief. We have a busy schedule. I'm a great supporter of our event strategy. Also, well done to our officers. It's great. Just wanted to point out the events are, they're from very small to medium-sized to big. So it's looking after the little guy, but we do want to attract some of those major events as well, so from outside our city, and bring people in to spend some of their money and spend some time here. Also, it's across the city. It's in our CBD here in Cleveland on the islands, Stradbroke Island in particular. It's wonderful with Quandamooka. We're looking for ways to make it easy for people to run their events rather than run them for them, and to minimise the public impact and maximise the benefits. So we'd just like to encourage our residents and our local businesses to get involved and provide lots of feedback, because we want to bring you on this journey. We want people being excited about events that come here, whether they be small, medium or big. Thank you.
Councillor Gleeson, comment?
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, just in response, I think it's just been said that the What's On Calendar was a product of this strategy. But I just wanted to point out that What's On Calendar has been around for a little while now.
I'll have the officer respond.
Thank you. Yes, there is an existing What's On Calendar on Council's website, and anyone can contribute to that. But what this strategy is saying is that we really boost that up. We have on our tourism website that's coming in the new year, we have a specific part that's an events portal, so it's available to the public to see what's going on. It's better, it's easier to use, but there's also another section where the event coordinators can network and discuss privately. Because that's identified as one of the big gaps, that the event organisers work in an isolated fashion, and if they bundle together and cooperate, they can get a much greater event. So you're both right.
There you go. How about that? You're both right. Councillors, any further comments? No further comments. Look, I just also want to take this opportunity to congratulate Tracy Walker and Kristen Banks. Very thorough engagement to pull this together, and a very diverse group of people, I suppose, with different levels of capacity. Not always easy, and to have such a thorough and well-informed strategy for us to take forward and hopefully implement, which is all part of our tourism strategy that falls under our economic development framework. These are the sorts of pieces that are missing to make those other documents successful. So thank you on behalf of Council. And I'll hand back to Councillor Hughes to sum up.
Thank you, and to Tracy, thank you very much. Excellent work that you've kept this within, mostly within your budget, and I acknowledge that you've put a lot of effort into that. And I've had a one-on-one and looked at what you're doing here. With a small exception, you've mentioned here the development of a pool of event equipment, which I think will be really fabulous for the community. Would you just very briefly outline that?
Are you summing up now, Councillor?
Yeah,
because you can't introduce new information when you sum up. So
ask the question on the development of the pool of event equipment and leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you.
for you, Madam Mayor. Action one is the development of that pool of loan equipment. So that was some of the feedback that we got, particularly for people doing events on the islands where it's expensive to get stuff over there. So we want to put together a trailer of equipment such as signage, the witch's hats, fencing, whatever we find is the need for most of these events, and be able to loan it to the different event organisations.
Thanks so very much,
Tara. No summing up, you're
no,
all good?
No, that's okay. It. Thank you.
Okay, councillors. Well, with that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? A motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. The next item is 11.3.1, no decisions under delegated authority for noting. Councillor Tolte, would you like to move that? So moved. Seconder for that, thanks. Councillor Boglari, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte? Any questions or comments, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Are those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 11.3.2, the Planning Environment Court Matters List. Councillor Tolte, would you like to move that, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll move the report for noting.
So moved. A seconder for that? Councillor Boglari, would you like to speak to that, Councillor Tolte?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's in the report.
Any questions or comments? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Item 11.3.3, Christmas Delegations 2016.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the officer's recommendation for item 11.3.3.
Seconder for that, councillors? Councillor Hughes, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a housekeeping matter that we need to make sure the organisation can move on through the Christmas break.
Speaker against? Comment or question? Councillor Boglari?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just clarification, because I have a very contentious development in my area at the moment. I just want to assure the public that we have asked with officers about what developments are coming up. They're not foreseeing anything like that. And the Mayor and the CEO have both discussed with me. We have their word that anything that comes up that is controversial will actually will hold a special meeting. If for some reason something comes out of the blue, we will be holding a special meeting where all councillors will be involved. And I thank both of them for that clarification and reassurance that was given to us on that matter.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. I'm advised that there are no matters that need to be decided, and I've got officers in the back of the room and they can just nod. There are no matters that have a time frame requirement for them to be decided before we return for our next general meeting in January. However, if for any unforeseen circumstances may arise, we certainly have this policy in place, and also we commit to making sure that all councillors can be advised. If there's no further discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Thank you. Next item is 11.3.4, our Economic Development Advisory Board update. Can I have a mover for that? Thank you. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Tolte. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Thank you. Recently, the Mayor and I both went to Sydney on a think tank, and some of the advisory board were down there. And what has struck me is that these people are not just... how do you say it, politically respectful. Sometimes people on these boards are very money-focused and they've got the blinkers on, but the members of this team actually really care about Redlands and what we have here to offer, and they're very passionate to get the best outcome, not just for us economically, but retaining our character and building on our Redlands values. They've got a real holistic approach, and I'm actually very excited about this board. And unfortunately, I've missed the last couple of meetings due to representing the Mayor elsewhere so she could get to the meetings. But I really encourage everybody to go, the councillors, to go to these meetings, because they're, inspirational. These people bring a lot of knowledge, and their passion for the Redlands is what has struck me. And I think the Mayor will agree with me. They're really coming up with a lot of support for us, which is wonderful.
Any other comments? Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, thank you, Karen. Absolutely agree with everything Deputy Mayor said, this board is absolutely respectful of our area and our values. They also do challenge us to innovate, to look ahead, to do things differently, and it is possible to do both. So just saying that while we can respect what we have, but also look to do things different and look to the future. So, I'm very very proud to be working with this board as well.
Any other comments? Probably just add my comment, if I may. The Think Space Workshop is an interesting experience that we thank Optus for the opportunity to work in their space in Macquarie Park, I think that's what we call it, which in itself is quite inspirational, how they cluster businesses together and generate opportunities for their economy. That relationship with Optus will also allow us to have that similar experience here. If I might just add, and it's in relation to our boards, and we've got a couple of them. In fact, all members of all of our boards are very passionate and respect the values of our city. And last night I had the opportunity of being with the Redlands Investment Corporation Chair, Phil Hennessy, who took his opportunity to introduce me to the Vice-Chancellor of University of Queensland, which is something he discussed with us. So all I can say is that these people actually work for us even when they're not working for us. And so they are a huge addition and a positive contribution to our city and very much worth the investment. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. I just feel as though it would be appropriate for me to acknowledge that there may be a perceived conflict of interest, given that I'm the director of the Red Place, which is an innovation space for community to take care of entrepreneurial ideas that they may choose to explore, and also a co-working space. But I don't think that will influence my decision in supporting or noting this report. I just want to mention that in
That'll be noted.
In terms of clarity. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? Just reading out that recommendation so you're aware, it is to note the report and also undertake a Think Space workshop. So with that, I will hand back to sum up, if you may, Councillor Boglari.
No, I think it's all been said, and I guess we should be wishing them a Merry Christmas too and look forward to working with them in the new year.
With that, I will put the motion. Those in favour, those against, motion is carried. Item 11.3.5 has been withdrawn, councillors, so we're moving on to the next item, which is 11.3.6. At this point, I would declare a conflict of interest, as these people are listed on my register of gifts from previous term of council, so I'll vacate the chair, though I don't need to. I decide to do that of my own volition, and I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to take the chair for the next three items.
Okay, councillors, 11.3.6. Can I have a mover for that one, please? Thank you, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move item 11.3.6 as recommended by the officers, MCU 013526.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder? Councillor Gleeson. Okay, we'll stay with the fours and against if councillors want to go into informal conversation. I'll allow that, but is there Councillor Tolte, would you like to? Okay, is there a speaker for? So you'd like to go into informal?
I think we should. Just information I've read last night and things like that.
Okay, Councillor Elliott, are you happy to move a motion to suspend standing orders? Moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Bishop. All in favour? Okay, those in favour?
Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Boglari, those against, Councillor Tolte. So that's moved. So I'll ask the office... Oh, she's already down here. Thank you. Emma and David are here. Councillor Elliott, would you like to ask your question, please?
Just on the South East Thornlands structure plan overlay, there's four, I'm just trying to find it again, sorry, councillors. The four criteria, sorry guys, this is long and wheeling the old planning centre as well. The in 5.14.7, the overall outcomes, it says in two, the overall outcomes sought by South East Thornlands Structure Plan Overlay Code are described in four key: land use precinct, movement network, land use conflict mitigation, and infrastructure. So that's the overall outcome. I'm just wondering why the applicant hasn't addressed with the adjacent park residential in the specific outcomes. It says 1,200 square metres with a 25 metre frontage. Why isn't that addressed in this application?
So we believe it has been addressed. So the land use mitigation component of the overall outcomes is the corresponding overall outcome in relation to that specific outcome. So I haven't got a copy of exactly what it says in front of me, but that is the assessment that we undertook to determine whether or not land use mitigation with an alternative approach to the 1,200 square metres and minimum 25 metre wide provision would be acceptable and still achieve the overall outcome. So that is the approach that we took, and we determined that their proposal did meet the overall outcome.
So it really doesn't matter on the specific outcomes. And I know the plan, they're 50 metre blocks and things like that. But to have a specific thing say there, and I read it again, and when I saw the full character, it's not like it's an... It specifically says this land use mitigation, that when you're right beside a block, a park, it's got its own little box, I think it's S3.3. It actually says that. And if there was nothing there, fine, we'd go with the probable. But I just find it bizarre, the more I've looked at this... that we can't, and I'm happy. Look, I'd like to give them a development permit, but address the specific. I think it's S3.3.
Emma,
I don't want to stop the development, but I'd like to give them an approval.
Emma. David just had his hand up. That was also just seeing what he had to contribute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought it might be worth just actually reading out the words. The overall outcome in the planning scheme, what it says, and as Emma says, how it's been assessed. So the wording is, uses and other development achieve a high standard of amenity by mitigating potential conflicts and impacts between new residential uses and existing dwelling houses on park residential zoned land adjoining the structure plan area. So what the applicant is required to do is consider how they mitigate the potential conflicts and impacts. This proposal before council addresses that, officers believe, by providing 50 metre deep blocks and by imposing a condition that says there can be no buildings within 10 metres of that boundary to the adjoining residential properties. We would say that is a solution which mitigates those potential conflicts and impacts, therefore complies with the overall outcome.
Okay, because I'll be S3.3 says one uses another development designed and located to protect the amenity of dwelling houses on the existing lots included in the park residential zone. I have a problem with this. We have a specific outcome, yet if there was no specific outcome, yeah, fine, I'd accept that. And I struggle with this. And then it goes included in the park residential zone by A, requiring reconfiguration of the land involving the creation of any new lots directly adjoining the park residential zone to achieve a minimum of one side area of 1,200 and two a frontage of 25 metres. And then it goes on B, it just says restricting the establishment of dual occupancies and multiple dwellings on newly created lots which directly adjoin existing park residential zone lots. So I just struggle with that. That is a specific thing, I've always led to believe the specific outcomes we could just about hang our hats on, and then it's not like it's, you know, you can do it in performance base, but when you've got a specific outcome, you should address it, I would have thought.
Emma, could you maybe just also explain how, even though this is one whole development, we are voting on it in three stages today, and the lots down that western side are only included in two stages? It's not in every stage as well. I just want clarification on all of that, and then also address Councillor Elliott's concerns.
Yeah, so through the Chair, the current item that's for consideration is the townhouse development, which doesn't involve any... it doesn't adjoin any park residential lots, so it doesn't... That issue doesn't come into the assessment of this MCU. But in relation to the specific outcomes are non-mandatory criteria. They are a higher level with higher weight than a probable solution, but they're not mandatory. And it's for that reason that not complying with a specific outcome doesn't actually constitute a conflict with the planning scheme or with the code. If it doesn't comply with it, that's the entire point of having an overall outcome. The overall outcome is really setting what the objective of that area is. And so that's why if there's non-compliance with a specific outcome, we're required to assess it against the overall outcomes. And that's exactly what we've done in this case and why we think that an approval is warranted, despite conflicting with a specific outcome.
Councillor Hewlett has also, I think, got some comments on that particular one, if that's okay. Councillor Elliott?
Yes. I'm finished on that. I'd like to come back on another that David Jean sent to us this morning as well.
Okay. Is this concerning that particular section of it? Or will we...
I just thought if we're going to ask about... There's three applications here on the same development. I thought we'd get the questions out of the way on this one so we don't have to keep going to informal for the following three applications.
Yeah, no, the CEO has said that... can we please...
I'll stop her butting in, please.
We have suspended it. I will ask no one for comments that have not come through the chair once you have been addressed and you have the floor. I have asked the CEO comments on all three because they are closely related agenda items can be discussed now. So, like Councillor Elliott has asked that question, which was more referred to the other two, but that is okay. We'll get all the questions out now, so then we just have this once. And I'm asking now, are there any more questions concerning the left-hand side or the western side of that, of any of these? Is it concerning that? Because we'll get one concern out of the way as we go, if that's all right. So we'll address these now, which is the western blocks that are adjoining the park residential. Was your question relating to that one?
Yes, it was.
Okay, please continue.
My question goes back to the very inception of this structure plan. If the council, I assume at the day in 2006 when the structure plan was done, surely there was community consultation, surely there were promises made to the residents in that local area about how this plan was going to come together. And obviously community consultation is supposed to be the cornerstone of what we do in this council as far as development goes, and yet we have an application here and we haven't even considered that consultation. We've gone out and told residents, these park resident registers, obviously believe you're going to have 1,200 square metre lots right next to you with 25 metre frontages, which will help mitigate looking over a sea of roofs, which potentially they will be now with these small 600 and less lots. So I just want to know, can David probably explain to me how a structure plan works, because I'm baffled that we can even consider those small lots when the structure plan was consulted, put into print, signed off by two state ministers, and here we are altering that structure plan. How does that work?
Regardless of whether it's a structure plan or the city more broadly, this is the planning scheme. We have to assess every application against the planning scheme. A planning scheme in its entirety and a structure plan go through public consultation. That informs the drafting of that document. We have to assess against that document, and there is a hierarchy within the codes within that document, as Emma has explained. The overall outcomes are the purpose of the code, and that's where we come back to, yes, there's a specific outcome that says 1,200 square metres. If you comply with that provision, you're deemed to have met the overall outcome. You are deemed to have mitigated the impact on those residents. But non-compliance with that doesn't necessarily constitute a conflict, as Emma has said. We still have to consider the overall outcome, which seeks to achieve that the impacts and potential conflicts are mitigated. an applicant has a right to propose a solution to that, as they have in this case, with that 50-metre deep lot, and a condition that we have recommended to say no buildings within 10 metres. We would say that that would mitigate the conflicts, and we're required to assess against that criteria. Yes, the public consultation is important in actually crafting the scheme. We have to assess against the code as drafted.
So, in your opinion, the applicant has mitigated looking out over those sea of roofs by putting a 10-metre tree buffer on their property, which will more than likely be cut down over years, so they'll have no buffer there. So I'm just imagining living in one of those big acreage houses, looking over. If I thought the 1,200 square metre lots there were 25 metre frontages, I'd be okay with that, because I'd be looking a little...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
No, I'm just saying...
No, when a point of order's
point
been called,
order,
you
Chair.
Have to stop. What's your point of order,
Council?
Council
needs to stick to the item at hand, Madam Mayor, not what may or may not happen.
Well, that's what
down,
our
the, down the track.
That's
only here, so there's no, it's not based on fact. It's not based on fact or evidence, Madam Chair.
Okay, can we actually... thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Please keep to the planning grounds. It's exactly
what
right. We cannot foresee. And no, the emotion in that isn't.
Yeah.
We need planning grounds.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. What concerns me is the planners are telling us that the specific outcome to me is higher order than a probable solution. Usually we get that excuse with a probable solution or an acceptable outcome. It's a tick and flick. Now we're getting told the specific outcome means nothing. And I just can't accept that. I can't accept that a specific outcome is of no value if they can address the conflict, which I don't agree with, the way they've addressed it. So, to me, we're letting the community down. This has been consulted. It's been signed off by a State Minister, the structure plan, and here we are allowing the developer to, not recommending the developer be allowed 600 square metre lots where they're supposed to be 1,200.
Okay.
I won't be supporting it.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Hewlett. Is there anybody who needs clarification on a point while we're in informal to speak to the officers, to ask the officers? Councillor Golay, you had a question previously.
I don't have a question, and I'm not sure of the protocols here. It's more observations, things that I, as a new councillor, have picked up on. So, first of all, I mean no disrespect to any officers.
Councillor Golly, I'm going to ask you to seek clarification, questions, and speak to the item.
Well, can I speak to the item?
Yes.
Okay. So, straight off the bat, if we look at page 38, it just comes up straight away. Although the proposed use does not comply with the intent of the medium density residential zone code and the Southeast Thornland structure plan overlay code, it's considered there are sufficient grounds to justify the decision despite the conflict. So here we've got two pieces of documentation that say it's in conflict. Then we move on to the specific outcomes, it's in conflict with that, but that's still not good enough to bring it into order. The primary concern here is that people have bought 6,000 square metre lots to establish a livable amenity in that area. And the hypothetical is that, well, one day they might be able to subdivide so it won't really matter. Well, that's not good enough. We've already heard, well, from my community, who have said, we want you to advocate independently on our behalf to see if we can get better outcomes for the city. And from my perspective, this is not a better outcome. This
okay, at the moment, we're in informal. You can argue the point when we go into formal, when we're going for and against. I've just allowed this for clarification or questions on it.
All right.
Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just been received further information. In the Southeast Thornland Structure Plan, it says in 5.14.3, Section 2, the Southeast Thornland Structure Plan Overlay Code only assesses assessment criteria specific to the Southeast Thornlands area that are not adequately dealt with by other parts of the Redlands Planning Scheme. In all circumstances, reference must be made to the relevant zone codes and any other overlay or material change of use or any other development may trigger. Should any case arise where provisions of the Southeast Thornland Structure Plan Overlay Code are in conflict with another code in the Redlands Planning Scheme, the specific outcomes and probable solutions in the 5.14.8 of the Southeast Structure Plan will take precedence. So does that say that the specific outcomes take precedence?
No, what that means is that they take precedence over the applicable zone code, so the equivalence in those zone codes. So it's where, so for example, there are zones that apply to the land as well as precincts that apply to the land under the overlay. And so what that means is that the overlay has a higher level of importance than the zone itself. So where there, so for example, the zone applies throughout the city, and so it has very generic kind of standards that can apply to any site that is zoned MDR or the urban residential zone. Whereas with the overlay, because it's very site specific to this particular area, it sets more particular standards. So where there's any inconsistency between what the zone code says needs to apply to that land and what the overlay needs to apply to that land, the overlay takes precedence. So that's what that statement is clarifying, is that the overlay takes precedence over the zone code, and so that's the reference that's being made.
The way that I would read it is that area is obviously UR zone, is that correct? So you can go to lots, in the Greenfield site, you can go to lots 350 square metres. Why wouldn't he go for 350s?
In this case, you wouldn't go for 350 because the overlay has identified that there is an alternative provision in this case. It is a specific outcome, but it doesn't change the interpretation of a code. So the interpretation of the code has the same levels. It has a probable solution, specific outcome, and an overall outcome. It's constructed in the same way, and so you take the same interpretation in terms of any non-compliance. It's just identifying there are more site-specific criteria in an overlay code than there is in the zone code, and therefore where there's any inconsistency between those two parts of the scheme, the overlay supersedes the zone.
Well, the way I read it is that the UR zone is 350. This says that specifically in the specific outcome, they've got to be 1,200 square metre lots, and it should take precedence. That's how I read it. So, anyway, thank you.
Is there any more clarification? Councillor Tolte, then Councillor Elliott.
I move we return to standing orders. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay, Councillor Tolte has moved a motion to return to standing orders. Councillor Gleeson has seconded it.
Before, can I?
I know that you have another clarification or question, whatever. You're happy for that to happen before we move the motion? Thank you, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you. It's always on. Councillor, just your attention. David sent us an email at 9:26 regarding the shading of the windows yesterday, and I'm just asking through you to Councillor Tell that we could include that in the recommendation of its as an amendment.
I believe it's
already. Is it, isn't it?
David, could you just speak to that for clarification? Yesterday, Councillor Elliott had a issue with the design element of the apartment buildings, which he discussed with you. I haven't seen that email myself, so other councillors mightn't have either. If you could please just clarify it, please. No, David, could you please speak to it? Sure. One conversation, please, guys, and the officer will now speak.
Yep. Councillor Elliott just raised some concern about the appearance of some of the buildings which would be fronting onto public roads in the development. We had another look at that. We believe that what's proposed does comply with the probable solution. However, we believe that it wouldn't be an unreasonable imposition to impose a condition just for some minor design changes or a new facade to be lodged. We've sent through a condition that would meet that intent, and that could simply be added to the end of the conditions package before Council to consider.
Does that answer your question, Councillor Elliott?
Yes, it does. Thanks through you to David. Thanks very much. And I just heard Julie mention that she was going to raise that as well.
Okay, thank you. Can I also just seek some clarification on this first item, which is 11.3.6? I don't know whether we can bring up that page at all on the screen, the one that shows the townhouse, which is the first one, 11.3.6. The one that shows the zoning. It's one of the maps, sorry, one of the diagrams. Yeah.
This one?
I will show you that one. Oh. I just want a clarification. This actual stage of this development is over two zonings, with a communal open space being in the middle due to open space that was put there. To me, that open space in the middle is superfluous to this, and I would have preferred it elsewhere, but that apparently cannot happen. But I also wanted it explained why we are allowing higher density in the northern part of that area compared to the southern part. My understanding is if full density of the southern part was allowed, it would be four stories, which I agree is, I feel, inappropriate to that area. So we've allowed some higher density in the top part, so it is a more appropriate and better planning for that stage of the development. Can I just have that clarified? Because we've just been talking... Yep, because we've just been talking about changing different densities in the area, and I think I'd like this one explained in particular, because it's actually for a better community outcome.
So during the course of the assessment, the applicants were asked to address a couple of constraints in relation to the land, so specifically the topography. It's pretty steep in parts of that site, so there's quite substantial retaining structures that are required. Also access in terms of waste management, in terms of waste services, as well as ensuring that the units actually address the streetscape. There will be a shared use bicycle path and footpath that runs along that proposed new road that's on the bottom part of that screen, and so we felt that having units that also present to the street provides a better kind of casual surveillance and security and things like that. So there were a number of assessment items to consider, and in doing so actually required that the density of the development was reduced in one part and shared over the two stages of development. So for that reason, it's slightly less development on one part and slightly more development on the other part, but it means that we have a better outcome in terms of those constraints of the site.
Okay, so before we move out of the informal, were there any other clarification, or we will then move on to item 11.3, once we vote to go out of it, we'll then move on to 11.3.6. And I would prefer if we can resist going back into informal. So is there any more clarification needed now on any points? Okay, so Councillor Tolte has put the motion that we move back into formal. It was seconded by Councillor Gleeson. I will put that vote now, please. All in favour? Passed unanimously. So now we're back on to 11.3.6. We're back into formal discussion. What do we do first, for or against?
Julie will speak. Julie.
Julie, you haven't spoken yet. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Is there a formal speaker against now, please? Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other issue that I wanted to raise, Murray brought my attention to the overall outcomes being infrastructure. And I assume that means the adequate provision of infrastructure. The infrastructure that I'm concerned about is state infrastructure, which is the lights at the...
Point of order, Madam Chair, this is not relevant to the application before.
It's related to the South
Eastern
Structure Plan. Well, can you please ask Jill Council to stop interrupting?
I'll let him continue, because there is an impact of traffic on that road. I'm addressing the point of order. Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. There is going to be an increase of traffic on that road, so infrastructure, including lights, is a point that he can argue. So, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's actually stated in the South East Dormer Structure Plan that those lights are supposed to be installed when this development came on. I think Emma tried at length to get the State Department of Main Roads to insist that it be, if I'm correct, that those lights be installed. The thing that concerns me is the safety of everyone that crosses that road. It's boundary roads, a four-lane road, as you know. People from this estate have got an option of turning left at the bottom and doing a U-turn up the road to get down to Victoria Point, or they go out through the Affinity Estate next door or Meadowlands Road on the other side, both which have crossings across that main road, but there's no signalling at those intersections either. So, look, and I drew attention to places like Anita Street and Giles Road, which is getting lights, where there's been fatalities and bad accidents, and we're proceeding with these developments without any main road infrastructure. I don't know why we should be approving it without it, personally. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a speaker for?
Madam Chair, could we have an officer answer the comment from the councillor, please?
Emma or David? Emma, thank you.
Through the chair, the difficulty we have in relation to refusing an application on the basis of inadequacy of state infrastructure is that we don't have the jurisdiction over that area. The state assessed the application against their own codes and considered the impact of the development on their infrastructure and whether or not it necessitated an upgrade. They determined that it wouldn't necessitate an upgrade at this stage. There's still future development that will occur on the northern side of Boundary Road that would take access from that same point. So it may be that in the future they determine that that application brings on the need to deliver that infrastructure, but at this point in time the state advised that they were satisfied that the infrastructure provided by the developer was sufficient to cater for the impact that they would be generating. So we're in a difficult position in the sense that the state has assessed the application, they've determined that the impact is acceptable and that the arrangements proposed by the applicant are acceptable, and they've put conditions on the applicant in accordance with that and the way that they have to design that intersection to ensure that it is appropriate for an 80 kilometre posted road. And so from our perspective, we wouldn't be able to refuse the application on that basis unless we have very clear evidence suggesting that there was a significant safety concern. And all of the expert evidence we've had to date has suggested that it would be okay.
Just a question, Emma. So when the state obviously haven't deemed that a signalled intersection is necessary, can they impose that cost on the developer? Is that something the Department of Main Roads would have to provide?
Yeah, it becomes their cost effectively. If that effectively is required in the future and they haven't required that it's been provided by a developer, it will be something that they'll have to deliver in time.
They can put that on cost on the developer if they chose.
Yeah. If it was necessary to service their site, they would be able to require it.
Sorry?
Councillor Elliott, your microphone's on. Okay. Speaker 4. A question, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a question through you to the officers. Being off Boundary Road, State Government Road, this development would have gone through to TMR for a referral at some point, and they would have assessed the need for traffic lights in regards to this development application, which is all we're judging on today. We're not judging on future applications down the track. We're being asked to vote on this particular development. Everything else is irrelevant, but I'd like to just confirm that Department of Transport and State Government would have assessed the need for traffic lights based on this development application.
I think
that's just been addressed.
Yeah, Emma just said that.
Yes, I can confirm that.
Yes, Councillor. Is there a speaker against? Well, I'll just take Councillor Golly, being the divisional councillor, speaking against, and then I'll come back to you, Councillor Hughes, for your question.
Thanks, Madam Chair. If I could just continue from before, referring to page 38, if we start looking at the conflicts straight away, I've already addressed page 38. If I move on to page 40, which looks at the state planning policy and regulatory provision, it says there, the site is located within an accessible area under the South East Queensland Koala Conservation SPRP and is within a koala broad hectare area. Division 3 of the SPRP applies. It then goes on further to say, Division 3 requires the development design to incorporate movement corridors and food species for koalas. Then goes on to say, the SPRP requirements are considered to be met through the provision of movement corridors via street tree planting, in particular along the Boulevard Road, which benefits from the extra wide verges delivered as part of ROL 005951 and the buffer planting to the site frontage. It then goes on to say, it's not considered appropriate for koala trees to be planted in these areas as it would attract koalas in the area, which could put them at risk of attack from domestic animals and being struck by vehicles. The final species for planting will be determined as part of the operational work stage of the development. So in one step we've got, in the state planning policy, it says make those provisions and we're going to meet that provision, and then the next sentence it says we're not going to enforce it. If
I go into page 41.
Excuse me, Councillor Golley, would you like that addressed by officers, please? And
well, I'd like to highlight...
Wait a minute, Councillor Golley, can I also... this is a very controversial, apparently, and emotional application. Can I please ask councillors not to speak while another councillor is speaking, and also the gallery, so that we can make sure that we actually hear what is being said and get any further information that we need. Councillor Golley, would you like that address, please?
If I could just continue, that would be fine. So if I look at page 41, it says, again, State Planning Policy, April 2016. So C, a high ecological significance wetland. That's not addressed. A, koala bushland. Now, if I go to koala bushland, and that's been addressed, and then I go back to the previous page, it actually says we're not really addressing it. We're going to plant, but we're not really going to plant. And it's just, if I look at it from the perspective of what are we trying to achieve here as a city in regards to the outcomes, I would refer back to a better outcome for the city would be to look at the 2004, and I acknowledge that it's an old application that's since lapsed. The 2004 application was to have it zoned as park residential, which would meet the amenity.
Councillor Golley, when a point of order has been called, Councillor Golley, the speaker has to end. Councillor Tolte, the point of order was?
The comments being made are in regard to a past application that has since lapsed and has no relevance whatsoever to the item in front of us now.
Councillor Golley, I understand why you have mentioned it, but Councillor Tolte's point is accurate.
The relevance is, Madam Chair, is that it's in this report. It's been listed that a past application had it zoned as park residential, which would be a more appropriate outcome to that area given the acreage lots that it's adjoining.
Would you like an officer to address that, to speak to that point?
I would, please, Madam Chair.
David or Emma, please.
Can I just clarify exactly which point? So there's probably a couple
Councillor
of things
Golley, can you just clarify your point, please, for the officer?
It's more along the lines of my address. I'm not actually seeking to have my points clarified. I'm actually speaking against this development on what I believe and what the community believes is not the best outcomes for the city. And I'm pointing out in the report that there is conflict upon conflict, and that in the opinion of the community and my opinion as their representative, that the park acreage lots are more suitable to the amenity of the acreage lots that are adjoining that western boundary. Look, no one is going to accept a four-storey lot or four-storey building in the middle of a paddock in a greenfield site. Okay, so of course that's not appropriate. But what is appropriate is what the community is asking for, which is to have a backyard. And this doesn't really
meet
that.
Point of order, Madam Chair. This is a latitude that really is
that is usually given. Thank you, Councillor Tolte. It's usually given to the divisional councillor who is representing the people of that actual local area. Leniency is often given to the divisional councillor. Councillor Golley, please make your points.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'll continue on. The UR Zone Code, page 42, clarifies that the probable solution for residential development density in the zone is one unit per 400 square metres. The density of Stage 1, including part of the open space zone area, is 1 unit and 238 metres squared, which does not comply with a probable solution. My point is we've, and this is with all due respect to the officers, because I'm sure they did their best to mitigate...
Can we have that point clarified by an officer?
Can we have those densities please clarified, Emma? Thank you.
I think I partially covered this with the previous question in terms of...
It's on page 42.
In terms of the fact that there are two zonings over this one development application and one part of the site is less dense than the prescribed probable solution, and the other part is more dense than the prescribed probable solution, and that the overall balance of development is in line with what was intended by the planning scheme.
which would probably format the reason why three separate applications were made and not one. My point is that I was put in this position to seek better outcomes for the city and for the division that I'm representing. I can't support this development because, in my view, there is too many anomalies, too many conflicts, and it is going to take away from the amenity of the acreage lots that are already in place. Now, yesterday I raised a comment which was perceived as an insult to officers. I know that if I purchased for a lifestyle block, I would not want to see townhouses or smaller lots right on my boundary, irrespective of how many buffers were put there. And with all due respect, I just cannot support this application as it stands.
Thank you, Councillor Golay. Is there a speaker for? Okay, for comments, I've got Councillor Hughes first, Councillor Gleeson, then Councillor Edwards. Thank you.
My comment may come at the end. I'm just seeking clarification when we get to the officer's recommendation of what we're actually moving, because it's saying it's a simultaneous approval with the other two developments, and I'm a little concerned that if we're moving this one piece, the recommendation is saying that's in line with the other two. So I'm seeking a clarification on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Emma. Can you please just give clarification on the recommendation?
Yep. So the reason that the recommendation is tied or dependent on another approval is that ROL 005951 is the one that creates the access road. The way that our the assessment and the conditions are drafted is assuming that access is taken from the road that's actually created by another application. So for that reason, the recommendation on this application is dependent on the other approval. So that's the reason for that link.
So I feel that potentially you're asking me to vote on something that is dependent on something that we haven't discussed.
So we're voting on the... Can we have the plan on the board, please, that shows... there's a map somewhere that has all three applications. That was in a presentation, sorry. We saw that yesterday.
There's an attachment for ROL 005951, the ROL plan stage 7, does actually show the areas we're talking about.
Thank you, Emma.
But, Madam Chair, would it not clarify if the officers just explained that simultaneous means that they can't build the units before they build the road?
I was going to ask the officers to point this out once we had that up. Thanks, Councillor Toldy. So, Emma, would you mind coming forward and actually explain how we've got the three lots and what connection they have and how that in relation to is actually applied, please?
So the MCU is lodged over both of these. So the MCU is lodged over both of these balance lots, which are actually created by this first subdivision. So that's the reason that the recommendation for this application is linked to this, on the basis that this this road, this access road, is created by this lot itself. So there are conditions that have been proposed that require that this can't proceed until that access is provided. But yeah, it was something that we've put in the recommendation as well, just to shore that up.
Yes, thank you, David.
So, councillors, condition or recommended condition number 4 on this MCU approval says that the building and operational works cannot commence until the survey plan that registers the road and the lots has been brought forward. So if councillors were to choose not to approve that subdivision, then this approval couldn't occur. One is dependent on the other, but your decision on this one doesn't fetter your discretion on those future applications. You can still decide all three applications independently, but this one cannot commence unless and until those lots are created.
I feel... potentially, we're voting on the officer's recommendation for the first issue, the ROL that we're dealing with now. The other two then become if we vote for the first one, we voted for the other two without discussion.
No, that's not the... I'll seek clarification there, but...
Well, if it gets through...
You can then... We will then be discussing the others fully, and we have... I'll let David answer it. He's the...
As I just said, this approval, should council grant it, requires that the lots are created through another subdivision application. If council were to not approve that subdivision application, this approval couldn't be implemented. So they are separate decisions, and you can make a decision on this one separate to the two subdivision applications. You can choose to refuse the subdivision applications, for example, and that would simply mean this approval couldn't be implemented. But you're not binding yourselves into a decision on those other applications.
Are you satisfied? Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I too would like to make a comment and wholeheartedly agree with Councillor Golly in that I'd love to see park roads everywhere. I think it's fantastic. I'd love to go out in the community and say, I can't vote for this because it's not park roads and that's not what you want. But the reality is the zonings and the master plannings of South East Thornlands was done through between the periods of 2004 and 2012 councils, and we don't have a choice in this. The property owner have development rights. If we don't like what we're being shown, we have to compensate them financially for loss of income or potential loss of income.
Point of order, I think that's incorrect.
Can I have clarification on
that? No,
sorry, Councillor Golly. There's been a point of order called. David or Emma, sorry.
If council chose to, you could seek to amend the planning scheme to remove the urban residential and medium density residential zonings and go back to a park residential zoning. However, I think it's unlikely that the planning minister would agree to such a change, given the location of the site. Even if it were approved to go back to a park residential type zoning, an applicant would still have 1 year in which to lodge an application under the current planning scheme. If council were to refuse to assess it under that current planning scheme and the development was refused, then there could be a potential compensation claim for loss of development rights. The difference in value between current zoning and new zoning. So it's
David, the
potential.
David, the application we are actually addressing at the moment, though, isn't under that zoning, is it? We are addressing the townhouse application at the moment, which is not the park residential zoning, is it?
So we shouldn't even be having this discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. So, Councillor Gleeson, has that addressed it? We are not doing the park residential one at the moment. We are doing the unit. It's a...
Madam Chair, I'm making comment.
Comment?
As was made before, okay. That I don't particularly like these sort of developments either. But we have no choice. We have to make our judgment based on fact and remove the emotion from it. And one of our big considerations that we have to take in on this type of application is, where do we stand? Is what they're doing legal and is it defendable in court? Do we potentially waste ratepayers' money, or do we actually stand up and make the occasional tough decision? It's not all fun in here all the time. Some of these decisions have got to be made, and you've got to determine sometimes whether you're potentially prepared to waste ratepayers' money or listen to the expert planner's advice and accept the recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, and thank you, Emma, for the work you've done, and David, for the input we have. This is really like Groundhog Day, isn't it? Every 5 years I've been here, every time we get these that come through, and they do create a lot of emotion, and of course, if you councillors see things that come before us that we're not particularly happy with, we probably do go start looking for points within the approval process that we think are at odds with the recommendation. One thing I'm quite aware of is that town planning is, I won't say dark art, but it's a very complicated process, and one that I certainly don't have the skills to, and I don't believe any of the councillors here have the skills to make the assessment. And the officers are charged with their expertise to go out and consider all these applications and bring back a recommendation that they feel is defendable. and compliant. Sometimes we do get these applications before us that we think, well, maybe there are other reasons that are strong enough that we can make a stand against the officer's recommendation. However, in this regard, I haven't seen any substantial issues raised that can convince me that we have sufficient grounds to stand against the officer's recommendations. So whilst I would like to be king tut for the day and just say, yes, we'll do this, that and the other, it doesn't work that way. And so for me to make a decision whether I'm going to support the officer's recommendation or I don't, and I don't have sufficient evidence in my mind to go against that, then my next port of call is to consider the public person, which we risk ratepayer money trying to defend an application. And in this one, I haven't been convinced that we can take that stand. So I'll be supporting this the officer's recommendation, as complex as it is. I do appreciate the opinions raised by councillors who are against aspects of this, and I wish there was some more substantial reasons brought before us, but I can't see them at this stage. So I have no alternative but to accept the officer's recommendation. And the only thing I would recommend outside of this is perhaps we need to consider in the future some councillor training in town planning.
Thank you. I have Councillor Bishop and Councillor Mitchell also with comment.
Yes, thank you very much. Wisely said, King Tut. I think you did touch on some very important things there. And also absolutely agree that our officers have been incredibly consultative with us. And in relation to councillors' various views and frustrations, fully want to understand the complexity and the occasional feel that we are through the planning assessment phase, placed in positions that do apply pressure and frustrations do appear, and I don't believe that at any stage I've heard anything that is intended to be disparaging to officers. I think there's just an understanding that there's complexity involved in the decision-making phase. And as a divisional councillor, you know, it's clear that for a very long period of time this has been paddocks, and we're now looking at a level of density that's been coming for some time. I concur with Councillor Edwards that change is something that it feels inexorable, and it doesn't feel like there's a great deal that we can do to change this, and I appreciate the amount of time and effort and energy that officers have put into bringing us along that journey and giving us the clarity that we need. There have been many, many, many workshops preceding this point that have addressed some of the anomalies that we've felt, and I know that some councillors do have outstanding issues in their mind that they feel might not have been addressed appropriately. For me, on balance, I have to acknowledge that the structure plan, an unwieldy beast that it is, does have those densities applied across the whole site. I appreciate that it is done through three phases and that has some complexities about it, but on balance it does feel as though this does address through the planning process the requirements both of the owner of the land, the developer, applicant, and ultimately will provide some diversity. And I think the way they've addressed those various things, the way that officers have brought those things forward in terms of the adjoining blocks, 10 metre setbacks, increased widths. I do want some clarity, and I think we've discussed previously that there's no further subdivision application potential, that this is dealing with the application as it stands, but I don't think there's
this
any...
This is just the townhouse one we're talking to at the moment.
Yep, okay, thank you. I'll just finish by saying it is a shame that our mayor is unable to be in the room, and that to me is a concern and a challenge of the consequences of living in 2016.
No, Councillor, excuse me, Councillor Gleeson, I've already called Councillor Bishop up. Thank you. I did.
Yes, because here we are making this decision.
So. No, don't go back there, thanks. Okay, Councillor Mitchell, then Councillor Golly. Councillor Gleeson, I'm going to ask you just this one time for no more comments and outbursts, please. I have had it addressed in other meetings where I've chaired, and not this time. Thank you. I ask you to abide by the standing orders, and which I am asking you to abide by the standing orders which are on you, or I will ask you to leave the room. Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Councillor McGlary. This stuff's complex and it's emotive, and I acknowledge that. The officers have put in countless hours of time. We councillors have put in hours, and the public need to know that. We don't make this stuff up. There is hours and hours of expert opinion and advice that goes into this. There are robust discussions behind the scenes, and I think some of it needs to stay there. I'm reminded of Ian Walker, who addressed us recently from New Democracy, who said, "You won't yell your way to success." Let's remember that. Let's stick to the facts. I think the theatre of chambers.
Point of
here,
order, is this? This is about the application.
Councillor Hewlett, thank you. Point of order, Councillor Mitchell. I'll allow you to continue.
And I agree wholeheartedly. So the theatre of chambers.
Councillor Gleeson, I'll be giving. Councillor Hewlett. No, well, I heard your voice as well. Sorry, Councillor Hewlett. I'm giving you the same warning. Please show some respect for the position, everybody. I know we are, as Councillor Mitchell just pointed out, emotive, and it's controversial, and we all want to do what's best by our community, but we owe it also to our community to act respectful, and we don't have that state... What does the state have that we don't have?
Parliamentary
privilege. And we are on video, so your community will also be judging you, not on how you vote, but how you act. Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. We won't yell our way to success. And in this chamber, I think we need to remember that. The officers have done a great job. The councillors have done a great job. We've assessed these things beautifully amongst ourselves. And I'm not going to let theatre overcome fact in this community. So I point
Councillor Mitchell, I've already asked you to address that, so I'll ask you again one more time not to repeat that type of innuendo on other councillors. I just asked for respect, and I'm asking, and respect for the theatre. So I'm asking everybody, please, it's one at a time. Now, I got told this morning by someone that this could be a heated meeting, and I went, no, we are professional and we will carry out that way, so let's try for that. There will be no conversations. Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Mitchell has the floor, so can we please be respectful? And as the, what did the minister say this morning, Peter? I've got it on the top of my pad over there.
Can I? Hope, love and justice,
and let's add respect in there and act like that. Thank you. Finish Councillor Mitchell and then Councillor Golly, and then we'll put the vote back to Councillor Tolte.
I just appreciate all the work that everyone's done, and I think we'll stick to the facts. Thank you. I'll stop.
That could have been the sentence you said in the beginning. Councillor Golly.
Thank you again. Without appearing emotive, as everyone seems to be going down the road of. Page 44. Although officers have not undertaken an independent assessment, it is noted that the developer has taken a risk in applying for a non-complying development. It is a non-complying development with multiple conflicts and multiple anomalies in this report. That is why I cannot support this. I would hark back to, much to other councillors discussed, an originating application back in 2004 was for Park Residential. However,
Golly,
if you just give me a little bit of leeway, I'll finish.
I gave you leeway last time. This time I think we're just about ready to put the vote, so I will not be tolerant. What's the word?
I won't
be too tolerant from now on, thank you.
Righto.
Okay, back to Councillor Tolte to sum up and we'll put the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would first of all just check with the officers, please. Do we need that extra condition to be mentioned in the motion at all, or do we need to alter the motion, or is, I'm quite happy to put that as the officers' recommended motion.
I'll just seek clarification on that.
So we've got the amendment up there.
Do we need to formally accept the amendment? Do we need to do that before I sum up?
No, I don't think you have to move the amendment.
Okay.
The motion before you, excuse me, the motion before you is the motion that was moved by the councillor initially.
Yes.
So is that what is up on the the board there?
I had received the email and I understood that the condition had been added. I believed it was in the intent of the officers when I moved the motion.
Well, forgetting all all emails, if the the motion that the councillor has put forward is the one on the board, then that is the one that you have been debating. If an amendment is to be made, then that needs to be made obviously now, prior to a vote being taken on it.
Okay, can we have the motion, which is actually going to be... That's it? So you're right with that? It is included in it? So,
yep.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Tolte.
Okay. So, in summing up, I'd like to return to a few points that have been made, and they've been really points of confusion, I think. There was mention made of how we can have trees in a boulevard which provide a wildlife corridor and at the same time suggest that we don't wish to plant koala food trees next to a major road. That makes perfect sense to me, and that may be because I've been the area councillor previously and I've been in the chamber a little bit longer. But a wildlife corridor doesn't necessarily have to contain food trees in order to contain habitat trees, and animals of all types can take refuge around that area, but we don't want to attract koalas particularly away from Epapa Creek, where they're quite safe and they do use the creek line to traverse the area up to a major road. So that in my mind answers those comments.
Councillor Golley.
There is already eucalypts as feeder trees.
No, Councillor Golley, you can't do a point of order on that. This is Councillor Tolte's summing up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also call attention to the fact that there is a 9-metre footpath area in the middle of this development. So whilst a lot of attention's been given to the overall consideration of the structure plan, the history of the area, concerns about densities, concerns about specific outcomes, etc., when you look around the various developments that come into the structure plan, this particular application, and we're looking at the units in this instance, fronts onto a particularly wide road, which we wouldn't normally have the benefit of in an urban area. So these residents, when they do live here, will have the benefit of a very wide road, large grassy verges and extra parkland that other areas don't benefit from. So it will be an improvement on what might otherwise have occurred there without the structure plan. The units that we're looking at the moment have an extra area of open space that will be a greater amount of open space than would otherwise be found in a unit complex because of the way the structure plan has played out through this application process. So the residents the future residents of this area will have extra open space and room within their unit complex in the form of green space that can't be built out. And then in addition to that, the overall area has such an abundance, and I use that word limited, that's in planning terms, not perhaps in the way the community might view it, of open space and parkland that it was more appropriate to put that extra parkland into the unit complex open space than to keep it in public open space. So this is a development which has extra wide road, it has extra green space in the unit complex, it has the Luke Street parklands and the connections that will come through the Epipar parklands as a recreational area for the units. And so the unit development through the design, and that's been mentioned by Councillor Elliott with this amendment, extra condition, provides units that don't turn their back to that wide open street. It provides a unit complex where the units look like homes and front onto the street like homes, and makes, I think, will make a greater community atmosphere for the people that eventually live here. So whilst there's a lot of contention about density, we have to look specifically at this unit complex and this development application, and it has actually got a lot of good things going for it that other unit complexes probably wouldn't. So, thank you.
Okay, just to remind everybody, this is the one stage we're voting on now. It is the townhouse stage. All in favour? Those against? Okay, those in favour are Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Boglari. Those against, Councillor Hewlett. Did I forget you? Oh, my apologies, sir. Okay, I better say that again to be on the record. Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell. Okay, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Boglari, those against, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay. Thank you, councillors. We are now moving on to...
Madam Chair, would you like me to move the officer's recommendation for item 11.3.7, ROL 005950, one lot into 17 lots? At 399413 Boundary Road, Thornland.
Yes, I would, if you'd like to move it. Do you want to repeat it all or not?
I will move it as recommended by the officers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seconder for that, Councillor Edwards. Now, I don't think we can go... We can go straight into formal because we've done all the to-ing and fro-ing previously. Is there a speaker against the motion? Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's like I've summed up previously, even though it relates to this particular application. I feel that hypotheticals are not justified when we talk about the 1,200 square metre lots along the western boundary, where, well, it could one day be subdivided next door, and so it doesn't really matter. The specific outcomes say that it's got to be 1,200 square metre lots, and so that's what I would stand for. I think that's what the community was hoping they would see along those lots, that boundary. I know that this particular application's been to-ing and fro-ing ever since I was elected, and so residents have contacted me. I have a list here. No, not just lobby groups, people who actually live in the area, and they wanted to see a better outcome for that boundary line. I just hope that the 10-metre buffer stays in place, and that it's not cut down, and that provisions are made in the future to actually build up onto that fence line, which seems to be the argument of, well,
Madam
if we
Chair,
allow the full 1,200...
Could answer that.
Excuse me, Councillor Tolte, please go through the chair, and I'll wait for Councillor Golay to end, and then we'll get anything addressed.
The perception is that if we allow the full 1,200 square metre lot to go there, minus the buffer, that... builders can build right up to the fence line on that western boundary.
Point of order, Madam Chair.
And that seems to be the...
No, Councillor Golay, when someone calls a point of order, you must cease talking. What's your point of order? Thank you, Councillor Gleeson.
Madam Chair, rather than talking about potential or possible perceptions, can we ask the officers for fact on that, please?
I said we would. I'm sure the officers are making a note of what he needs addressed. Thank you for that.
I'm asking now, Madam
Well,
Chair.
I'm letting it rule the way it is. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. I accept what my colleague, Councillor Gleeson, is saying, but in our workshops, they were the hypotheticals that were presented to us that we were to debate on. So I find it interesting that here we are now, before a public gallery, that suddenly we can't address those hypotheticals either.
Councillor Golay, so your 2 points so far. Emma, would you like to address them for him, please?
So in relation to the 10-metre setback, we've proposed conditions with building envelopes that actually mean that any future development has to comply with that 10-metre setback. Our report also provided an option that if councillors wanted more certainty, they could impose covenants that achieve the same, but that would be discoverable on title as an alternative option. The only mention in relation to future potential on the adjoining land was literally in terms of which of those two options you may want to interpret, as opposed to the actual merits assessment of the lot layout itself. And I think I'm forgotten the other point.
So if I just finish up, I suppose, with those points and put it on record, that the developer did say they could do a 1,200 square metre lot, but they would seek to cut down the block sizes even further in other parts of the area.
Can you just, so what were the points you wanted to address?
The points are is that the community were expecting the 1,200 square metre lots based on the fact of the amenity of the acreages next door. And so I understand that there's been some provisions taken.
Yep, but this is the application ahead of us at the moment,
yep,
so we can't get that changed at the moment. So your points of concern with this particular application?
Well, the outcomes. The outcomes that are for the community, which was the 1,200 square metre lots, that is my concern. To my mind, it hasn't been addressed. The developer has basically, words of effect, gotten his way to create a yield.
No, Councillor Golly, I'll ask you to retract that statement.
Okay. All right, I retract that.
Thank you. Have you got clarification on a concern on this application where
I'd rather see the 1,200 square metre lots along that western boundary.
Thank you. Is there a speaker for the motion?
Can I ask a question of the officers, Madam
Certainly, Chair? Councillor Toldy. I was going to say someone else actually had a question as well.
I would like a little bit of a presentation from the officers, please, in regard to the open space. This particular application includes the parkland and the open space and the dam area that is to be removed, and I think it would be appropriate if the officers spoke to that.
Yep, happy to do that. I'll just give Liz a second to find what... Maybe, Emma, if you can do your magic again and find it quickly and tell Liz which one to bring up.
And then
if you'd like to come up the front and give that presentation on the open space in particular, was it Councillor Toldy? Yes, thank you.
There's an aerial that's in an attachment to this ROL, so ROL 005950. It's attachment 2 to that. Yep. Oh,
Thank you, Liz.
So the area that's zoned
over... Officers, we've got the presentation. Can we show respect and listening, please? Councillors. I apologise to the officers.
So attachment 2 identifies the area in the southern part of the site. So the actual urban zoning of the land stops just to the north of that dam. So all of the land to the south is proposed to be dedicated as part of the development. The dam itself is proposed to be filled, and I think the next attachment should demonstrate what it is that the developers are proposing for that part of the site. So attachment 3. Oh. Right, obviously I didn't attach the right plan. No, so there is another plan. So this is the alternative option, but there is another plan which obviously wasn't attached to the report.
That's not the one that's
No, there was one attached to the report, which was presented yesterday, which is one of the proposed... It won't be in there.
Okay, so we don't need to get through this speech.
No, yeah. I might sit this down. So we'll recall, or councillors will recall from yesterday that we presented a layout for that park area that identified that this development would deliver a local park with an equipped playground, picnic barbecue area, informal kickabout space, and it's as part of 3.3 hectares of open space to be dedicated. So that's what this development will be delivering that as part of it.
Thank you. I was just, because that was mentioned, I was just asking the CEO, I've got a copy here, I was just going to get someone to pass it around the gallery so they knew what we were saying. I won't be playing charades with you, Councillor Gleeson, because you did not pick up my hand movements then, so. Does that address your question? Just to show the gallery what we were actually talking about then.
I wonder whether we should touch on, as it's been mentioned out in the community, about the retention of the dam, and that we have made, well, we're assuming we're about to make a decision not to retain the dam, to go with the wider park plan, that perhaps the technical aspects of why, as a general principle, we don't keep farm dams, the environmental reasons that we don't do that and the engineering reasons why we don't do that could be covered.
Thank you, Emma.
I'll just refer to my notes from the other day. So in terms of agricultural dams, historically agricultural dams were for feeding livestock and providing water to the family farmhouse. And so generally they were drained over time from use and times of not a lot of rain. So when you do get then high rainfall events, dams can generally then fill up. In cases where dams become effectively an ornamental feature, they're fuller for most of the year, in which case when we do get higher rainfall events, they tend to overflow. Any weeds or other stormwater quality problems that may occur in that water body then get transferred to kind of more sensitive waterways, in this case at Prepar Creek. So we discussed the retention and or removal of the dam with Council City Spaces team, with Council's City Infrastructure group as well, just to discuss whether or not in this particular case we thought it was necessary to retain the dam. We also identified that to the developer and said this is something that is of concern to local residents and to some councillors. So what they did is they also commissioned a water body assessment to determine whether or not it necessitated retention. Their report demonstrated that at the moment the dam is generally in good order. They didn't do a detailed structural survey of the dam, but said that it generally looked okay, and that their biggest concern was that post-development the actual water quality and the environment around the dam would change even if we were to retain it, and that would ultimately reduce its kind of ecological significance over time. So that includes, the fauna that would be using it. This is going to be an area of play. There'll be a lot more people around. So that would have an effect. In terms of city infrastructure, they also advised that it was likely to be very costly for council to maintain it. They highlighted that it was very likely that quite significant modifications would need to occur before council would want to ensure that public access of that area was facilitated. So that includes modifications to the actual area of the dam. So probably that small area to the north probably would have had to have been filled in, that component. Amendments to the batters of the dam to make sure they were safe in case anyone fell in. And some other amendments that would need to go on as well. And then there would be an ongoing consideration. So it would also require the relocation of the park to an area that was probably less preferable from a casual surveillance and sight lines and septed principles further down the slope. So from that perspective, we made an assessment and determined that actually the reasons to fill the dam were more compelling than the reasons to retain it. And so our recommendation is that the dam is filled and that the development is to proceed with a local park for the community.
Thank you for a very comprehensive reply. But it was appreciated because I have also had residents contact me about the dam. So thank you. Councillor Tolte, was there any other questions? Okay, thank you. Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in relation to the dam, it says in the structure plan, protect remnant and non-remnant vegetation, cleared areas and artificial wetlands that contribute to local habitat. That's in the structure plan. The residents at the time that the structure plan was signed were given a guarantee that that Luke Street dam would remain. And it's also interesting to note that the water habitat assessment done by the developer did not include a fish and macroinvertebrate study. So how do they know there's nothing there if they didn't look? Emma's already pointed out that the dam's in good condition and structurally sound, so in my opinion, that dam should stay. It is absolutely... I thought when I drove around there, I thought it was a lake. It's beautiful. I can understand why people are upset about losing it. I recall down further in South East Thornlands in Rackow Street, there was a court order to protect a much smaller dam than this at the back of a property. So I don't know why we've got this process of just getting rid of... And talking about maintaining it, we maintain hectares of conservation land at our environment levy every year and parks. So this is a beautiful aesthetic which I believe should be retained.
Did you want any clarification from officers on those points that about the level of study and what vegetation will be removed with the alternate playground?
And the structure plan where it was signed off that was being retained.
And if in, yeah, if possible, either of...
I don't have a copy of the structure plan in front of me to clarify that, but in any event, in terms of the reason that the scope of the study, the study still maintains that it is a good dam. So we could have asked them to do more to prove that it's a good dam, but I think the issue was that their biggest point was that post-development there would be significant changes to the quality of that dam. So it wasn't so much, they probably could have got them to do a much more detailed assessment of the quality of the dam as it stands, but the biggest concerns that they raised was that irrespective of whether or not that occurred, the changes that would occur post-development would actually have quite a significant effect. And in terms of the vegetation, there's obviously, we discussed yesterday, there's quite a large amount of trees along that southern bank, which is actually a concern that City Infrastructure raised with us in terms of ensuring that the health of those trees is maintained in perpetuity and the risk that they cause to the structural integrity of that dam wall in the event that they were to die or be struck by lightning or other events, I suppose. So that we have other dams in the city where that has occurred, and that has caused significant problems with water flooding through those dam walls and actually damaging property. So this is based on experience we have elsewhere in the city, and so they had quite a lot of concerns about having those trees on that dam wall.
Isn't there a water retention basin being planned which is going to deal with the stormwater that flows from that estate above it?
From the
water quality, yeah, will be treated, so I don't understand how that would impact on the dam.
Because it will still change the water, it still will be different water quality than what is currently going through there. You currently have a huge area of farmland, and you're talking about a huge grass area compared to a bioretention dam. So it will still meet the standards that are required. It will be different to what is currently running off the site.
Excuse me, Councillor Hewlett, David would also like to reply to you.
I just wanted to confirm the reference in the structure plan to retention of a dam, and it does seek retention of a dam, but that's actually in the coastal corridor, so that's on the area to the coast near Rackow Street. It doesn't relate to this particular dam. No, it refers to that particular dam in that coastal corridor. So that's the area near Rackow Street, not this particular. No, I can't confirm that.
No, if it's not written there, they can't confirm it, Councillor. Sorry, your microphone's not on now.
That's what I was saying about the community consultation. Do we refer back to the original consultation with the community and what was going to be there and what wasn't going to be there? Or, I mean, we're assessing an application and using current performance planning criteria, but what about the original, and this is what I keep alluding to, what about the original community consultation about that structure plan? What happened to that?
I don't know whether there's an answer for that one, officers.
No,
Councillor.
Councillor, I think the answer simply is we can only assess on the documents that we have and the current laws. So I understand your concern. Again, from an officer's point of view, we need planning grounds, and I'm not downplaying the community concern other than we have these documents in front of us to assess her against.
Am I allowed to comment about the rest of the, this development, or are we going to go back
Yes,
to that?
And then I've got Councillor Gleeson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd just like to put the motion.
Okay, the motion has been put. We just move straight on to that now. Is there support for a put motion? Those in favour of a put motion? Those in favour of the put motion are Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell. Those against the put motion, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari. That has been lost. Now, Councillor Hewlett, we'll let you continue, and then Councillor Gleeson had a comment or clarification he was seeking.
I have to say I was a little bit confronted by Councillor Edwards' comment before that we need training on the planning scheme. And let me tell you, if you've been here 4 years and you don't understand specific outcomes and problem solutions, maybe you shouldn't be in the job.
No. Councillor Hewlett, I'll ask you to retract. Excuse me, councillors. I'll ask you to retract that statement, please.
He was making an accusation about us. I wasn't making an accusation about him.
Please just retract the statement. Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. No, he just retracted it. Thank you, Councillor Hewlett. So, please continue with respect.
So what I've said many times, and I think planners will probably confirm this, the planning scheme is a very subjective document, very subjective. So when they say that the 10-metre buffer at the back of those small lots against the park residential will mitigate what would be there if it was larger, will mitigate the issues that are foreseen by the community, then I can...
Thank you. Please continue, Councillor Hewlett.
Is the flicking stopped? So I can come up with reasons why I don't believe that is going to mitigate it, and they can come up with reasons that it is. So which way do we lean? I'm just pointing out that it's very subjective. The structure plan says 1,200 metre lots to protect the amenity of those adjoining blocks. I don't believe the 10-metre buffer is going to be adequate, and I don't believe that 10-metre buffer will be retained.
Councillors, please listen to when another councillor is speaking with respect.
So I don't understand how this could be coming forward. Like, what we're recommending is half the frontage and half the area of each block. I'd support this if they increase those to at least 1,000 square metres and conditions, but not 600 when the structure plan says 1,200.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Hewlett. Councillor Gleeson, you had your hand up.
Chair, could we just have an officer respond to that lot size? They're not 600 square metres.
So the lot sizes range from 600 to 1,000. The recommendation is not based on just a 10-metre setback. That's one of the requirements. So it's just to say that there's variation in lot sizes along the boundary. So they do vary from 600 in the areas that are the least sensitive to impacts on amenity, and they go up to 1,000 square metres and 20-metre wide frontages where the most sensitive parts of that boundary are.
I did notice that there was one lot that had seven adjoining lots on its boundary. I mean, that's just insane.
Councillor Hewlett, the CEO, would just like to make a comment on that point too, please.
Councillors, look, I know you know the process. Officers assess it as they see it, based on their professional opinion, their interpretation of the legislation. Your responsibility is to weigh up that information if you believe there are other planning grounds. The legislation is quite clear that you state that, and then really the final say is either the court, which then rules on those matters, or if it's called in, it's really the Deputy Premier or the delegates there that can call in an application and decide it. So again, officers make their informed opinion through that. If you have different ones, that is your right to state those cases. To put up an alternate motion, you just need to specify the planning grounds and convince your colleagues who are the decision makers that has more merit than what the officers are saying. So again, officers have considered all those. I think we've had nearly, how many workshops? 5, 6 through this. The answers from the officers don't change, but they have tried to work with the developer and the community concerns, so we are working through it. So again, just wanted to point that out, that you can have different opinions, you need to get planning grounds, you need to state those, get your colleagues to agree to that, and then that is up to the courts if a developer or an applicant appeals.
Okay, Councillor Gleeson didn't want to speak. Is there anybody else that would like to say something, or I'll return to Councillor Tolte to sum up, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in closing, I'd just like to mention again that this development is going to have access to a really fantastic open parkland, which adjoins onto Weber Park Creek paths and pathland as well. And the park, unfortunately, we couldn't see a picture, but the gallery have seen the one that you passed around, will be a really nice park. And so when weighing up these applications, I think one of the things that always concerns me is access to open space and parkland, particularly for families, and this development will have a very good access to that.
Okay, with that I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell. Those against? Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari.
Madam Chair, would you like me to move on to 11.3.8?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I'll move the officer's recommendation for the application for 11.3.8 ROL005951, which is one lot into 35 lots and three balance lots at 399 to 413 Boundary Road, Thornlands.
Councillor Gleeson seconding that motion. We'll move straight into formal. Against?
I'd like to put the motion.
Is there favour? Is there a seconder to put the motion?
Yep.
Yeah, I think there has to be some discussion first. Councillor, oh, sorry, Nick. Nick would
please do that to me, Madam Chair.
I will not do that to you on your last meeting with us.
Pretty sure from memory there has to be at least two speakers in the debate before a put motion.
Yeah, I thought that. I was certain there had to be some. There had to be some debate. Okay, so moving back into formal, a speaker against, please. Councillor Hewlett.
Again, same thing as last time. 1,200 square metre lots up against those park residential properties. I'm not going to go through it again, but I just want to reiterate.
Madam Chair, I don't believe this one relates to the 12.
Yes, it does. It has the top northern blocks on the western side. Thank you. For memory, yep.
And I just want to put it on public record that I'm extremely, I'm not going to foretell anything, but I'm really, really concerned about the pedestrian and vehicular safety across that intersection. It is really dangerous. I drive that road nearly every day. It is really crazy to approve this development without those lights there, and I don't know what the state members can do about it, but it is really a big issue. That is a really busy road at peak hours. I can't see all those cars doing U-turns at that little U-turn area to go back to Victoria Point. It is a massive issue. I can't reiterate that enough, and I think the planners would agree with me. We can't make the state do it, but it's just something that I want on the record as one of my main concerns, is the safety of that intersection. Thank you.
Okay, CEO.
Councillor, look, if you feel that strongly, I would suggest that you write or talk in the Mayor Council and get the councillors through the Mayor's office to write to the state member and the various departments to do that. We've done our concurrency agencies submissions in those. And so, again, I would suggest that if, depending upon how the vote goes, if you're still unhappy, get that, and I'm sure the Mayor's office will write that on behalf of the councillors.
Thank you. Speaker for the motion. Okay, we've run again. Because Councillor Golay has had his hand up and he's the divisional councillor, I will let you address planning issues on this one.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Again, I just refer to the specific outcomes, 1,200 square metre lots. It was specifically designed that way or drafted that way so that the 6,000 square metre lots that are on that western boundary have the amenity of their lifestyle, which they purchased, paid good money for. I don't see why we have to accommodate the smaller size lots along that boundary.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, I'll pass back to Councillor Tolte.
Happy to put the motion, Madam Chair.
Okay. All in favour? Those in favour, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell. Those against, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari. Could you please ask the Mayor to come in? Thank you. So we'll just take a second while the Mayor comes back and resumes the chair, please. Thank you, officers, very much for not only your time today, but in the past.
All right. Okay, councillors, next item is 11.3.9, which we have a Paul Gallet is moving the officer's recommendation, seconded by Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gallet?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. The report 11.3.9, Cleveland Library Restaurant, seeking an extension for 5 years of their lease. Council are the landlords of Cleveland Library Restaurant and currently lease the Little Bloomfield Cafe or Proprietary Limited. The purpose of this report is to seek Council's approval to grant a 5-year option extension to the existing lease.
Any speakers against? Any comments or questions? I think we have had discussions on all of these items, obviously, yesterday. So if there are no others, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously, although we have Councillor Tolte and Councillor Gleeson absent. Next item is 11.3.10. Councillor Boglari, you move the officer's recommendation?
I'm happy to... Oh, sorry. Yeah, happy to move the motion on 11.3.10, the Redlands Koala Conservation Strategy.
Seconded for the motion, thanks. Councillor Hughes, seconded. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
I'm sure there's other comments. I'll sum up at the end. Thank you.
Any questions or comments, councillors? Speaker for? Question, Councillor Hughes?
In supporting this report, thank you very much. I've just got a couple, Mayor, I've got a couple of questions. On page 138... reduce koala deaths on roads. Just seeking some clarification, I don't have the history on this. Review and implement road treatments as per action plan of Redlands 2007. What does implement road treatments are we talking about? Thanks.
Gary Fertinas, where are you? There you are, sorry. Could you just perhaps...
Councillors, road treatments, there's a number of different... is that your question, is what is a road treatment? We reviewed this particular document. It's still relevant. What it's done is assess the, I suppose, the interface of koalas on a number of different roads, including local roads and state roads. Treatments vary depending on its location and... obviously, possibilities or options that are available at that particular point. In some cases, it could be recommendations to look at reducing speed limits. In other cases, in Sturgeon Street, where there's been a lighting upgrade, there's been an additional set of overhead streetlights installed to illuminate the area. In some cases, the amount of vegetation that's in median strips has been removed so that there's a clear visibility, so drivers have an opportunity to respond. In some cases, it could be just the classic opportunities of traffic calming. In case of state roads, the measures that have been undertaken have included culverts or fauna crossings, mostly in Redlands. It's a passing underneath a roadway to ensure clear passage. There's fencing elements. There's awareness elements in relation to signage. So it ranges in number of ultimate. And more recently, we're also looking at, I suppose this is a little bit new, but there's some new technology regarding virtual fencing, which is using technology about lights and sounds that can actually create some sort of a barrier without actually having to put up a physical barrier.
Thank you, Gary. And in the two more dot points down, Koala Research initiate a research partnership program, and I wonder about that. Thanks. Whom would that be with? Thanks.
The program itself is a generic terminology for developing up partnership research partnerships with a number of different. We have currently a current research program at the moment that looks at chlamydia and the disease and vaccination. So in relation to research projects, is identifying or outlining where the research requirements are and seeing whether we can create some sort of collaboration with people that want to research in this particular area and direct them to information that then will assist us with management actions.
That one is University of Sunshine Coast and Wildlife Warriors Australia Zoo.
Just touching very briefly on the financials of this, understanding that we did discuss it in depth yesterday. Just again, I want to reiterate, and for the community especially, that we've noticed that and noted an additional budget allocation in next financial year 17-18 of $474,000. I just would like to note that that is subject to budget review. So I don't want people to go out and think that that's a spent dollar.
So all decisions made here that require budget considerations for future budgets are subject to that. So,
and it was important for me to highlight and emphasise that point. Thanks.
Obviously, that's the next tier of decision making that's required to ensure that these various strategies are implemented.
So I thank the officers for that report and how well worded that was. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Comment?
Yes, indeed. I'd just like to acknowledge that the work the officers have done. It's an important species, obviously. Sometimes there are people in the community who tend to focus specifically on this one species, as though this is the only species that is part of the habitat, because there are laws in place, and I think it's very important that we acknowledge there are many species and it's part of a whole understanding of the management of the ecology. But it is a very iconic species, and I liken this particular couple of reports, one being the conservation strategy, Koala Conservation Strategy, and the other being the Conservation Action Plan, a bit like the event strategy that we had a moment ago and the event action plan, because a koala in the modern era is a bit like an event, and certainly I was just on Stradbroke Island yesterday, and a koala actually ran through our campsite, and it was going from one tree to another, not used to having people in its way for most of the year, and suddenly it's peak season on Straddy, and it was quite a sensation that occurred. And I know in the area that I live in, St James Park, when there's a koala, or down in Thornside, when there's a sighting, it's an iconic experience that really binds people together. It is an event. It's very important that we have a strategy like this, and as you've outlined, Mayor, thanks to Councillor Hughes's question, there is a supplementary phase that's going to be about how we manage the costing of all of these things going forward. The point I'd like to really make here is that this is about all of us. This is an iconic species that potentially is at the threat of extinction in a lot of areas on the southeast Koala Coast, in the Koala Coast. And the things that we do now will make an impact not only on this species, but the amenity of our area, tourism and many other aspects associated with the iconic lifestyle that we have in Redland City that historically has included the koala. The extent to which these things are implemented and integrated by everyone, and I think it is a shared journey that going forward will prove how successful that process is. Acknowledging that, you know, in a city, when development is occurring and urban growth is part of the natural cycle, that does put pressure on these particular species, and I think it's important that we have this. So thanks very much to the officers.
Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Bogle, would you like to sum up?
Oh, thank you. I actually wrote some words last night because I feel this is not too long, Councillor Elliott, don't worry. It's extremely important, and I value the officers' time and value that they've put into this. This koala conservation strategy, though targeted in words to the koala, will benefit all residents, flora and fauna. We can't be short-sighted and have blinkers on as to the greater benefit our environment has to Redlands. It is what makes Redlands, it actually gives Redlands the character that we care about and we all love to live here because of it. There are ethical reasons why we should be doing all we can to preserve the koala, and over the years, various state governments have made changes to policies to ensure their importance is listed, such as in 2015, the Nature Conservation Act 1992 added the whole of Queensland's koala population as vulnerable. Previously, only it was the Southeast Queensland koala population. However, we can also ask ourselves, does Redlands want to be part of a $1.8 billion business? Does Redlands want to be part of an industry that generates over 14,000 jobs? And does Redlands want to increase house values by 40,000? These are economic impacts from koalas in Australia that we should all, that should make us all sit up and take notice of this flourishing industry, and we should be jumping at our chance to be part of it, as one of our priorities is economic development. And the koala ticks all of these by increasing tourism in our unique environment, by maintaining an urban koala population and also a bush koala population and Stradbroke Island. When you speak to any international tourist, they don't come to Australia for our architecture or to see our latest subdivision. They come to experience the Aussie experience, which is our natural assets. And Redlands, pardon the pun, should be milking this opportunity because we have what has the potential to be the Australian koala capital and attract more and more local, national and international tourists. Years ago, I went to Gunnedah because in 2009 I found out they actually have this title, and I bought a a tea towel that I've actually had in my office ever since that trip, because Gunnedah has it as the capital, koala capital of Australia. I'd like us to give Gunnedah a run for the money and go into a competition with them and make Redlands the capital. Because while I was there, they couldn't even show me a koala. And yet they had, I think it was 11 camper vans, those RV vans, all there at the tourist site because they had heard it was the koala capital. And I thought, well, you know, that's false advertising. And I've always thought maybe we can give them a run for the money. Another priority the Economic Development Board also suggested to Redlands was giving a branding, and as I mentioned before, this is something that the Mayor is also very passionate about, to get us on the map. And as Samantha Kennedy, who's on that board and who I've got a great deal of respect for, said in a recent conversation, this should be easy for Redlands because of your beautiful environment and koalas. Why haven't you done it? So here, Redlands has a chance to increase local job opportunities through tourism, make our suburbs even more inviting with green corridors, which is why certain suburbs hold their value compared to others, and get Redlands on the map with branding for our beauty and uniqueness. This strategy, therefore, focuses on a lot more than the koala. The positive impact it has on the koala flows through to many of our council's key priorities, and this is how we achieve these priorities, is by taking care of our assets, and this one of them, most importantly, is our koala population. So I just wanted to stress, we keep talking about koala and sometimes as if it's a dirty word, but there is just so many values, not just the furry little animal and through ethics, but we get much more from the koala than we ever give to it. And on that, I'd just like to move the motion. Thank you.
Councillors, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? A motion is carried. Those in favour is Councillor Bogg. It's everybody. Those against is Councillor Gleeson. So I don't need to name them all, do I? Yes. Next item, councillors, is item 11.4.1, which is the Coastal Adaptation Strategy. Do we have a mover for that, councillors? Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Hewlett. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Oh, thank you. Again, we're always saying in here, we are a coastal council. I've forgotten how many kilometres there is, but we've got all the islands as well. 220, is it, of the coastline. and there are various areas which definitely need our attention. I was out there on Monday with the erosion that's occurring on the western side of Wellington Point, and I appreciate the work that has gone into this, and I also appreciate that it is a living document that officers will continue to update. They're going to continually ground truth. Just because it's in here maybe as a certain priority, don't feel threatened that it's not going to get ongoing attention. I've spoken to the officers about that, and I just feel now through this document, with these areas being addressed, the appropriate attention will be placed in these areas. So I thank the officers for this amount of work, and I look forward to working with them on those areas, not just, you know, across the city and also in my own area. Thank you.
Speaker against? No? Okay, Councillor Hughes, and then Councillor Bishop.
I had some trouble understanding. This one had an extra one-on-one. Obviously, it's ongoing. So this is no end, no start to this project. Is that correct? Yes, it's just literally it's a living document. It's ongoing. So with that in mind, with the budget and the expenses, is this capital or operational expenses? Thanks.
I think we had this discussion yesterday, and being phase one, there's obviously extra phases to come, so some of it will be most of it will be operational from what I can gather. But obviously as we move through the phases, and there might be works required, that could be capital.
And obviously understanding that with our budget process, with capital, it'll come back to us.
Correct, as was articulated earlier.
Thank you. And with our current budget that we've got, is this new money that's gone into this year, or because it's a living document, has this been just going on for many years? I just don't have a history on this one. Thanks.
There's been I'll try to answer it, and I've got expertise in the back of the room if I need it, but there's obviously been ongoing investment in coastal adaptation. It's fair to say that we have 220 kilometres of shoreline in the city, and there are competing priorities. And one of the reasons that we came to this process, and it was a stakeholder approach with various levels, including the state government, because some of our challenges are with state government legislation. So for the last 2 years, certainly I've been part of a steering committee at that level, and then we've had various local councillors with their own communities and some of the issues that they face. So it's obviously been resources invested to get to this point, and obviously there'll be bidding for more as the time goes. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's been ongoing. But this is obviously bringing it all together and creating a list of priorities based on some of the criteria that are listed in the report, so that we have a value set that we can make those priority judgments on. Does that cover that, Tracy? Thank you. Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'd just like to acknowledge that there's ongoing work with the state government and I think federal government as well in relation to this and support funding-wise for doing certain elements of this work. Note that doing phase one allows us to move on to phase two, which is very importantly identifying emerging risks and going to community consultation and engagement, which is very important because across the city, 220 kilometres, there's a lot of different areas and some of them have different priorities. They've been variously noted, but it's most important that we go to the community and get some clarity from their perspective about what are the real-time feedback loops that officers can address and think about in the management phase going forward. And in terms of some recent consultation which happened in Thornside near Beth Boyd Park in relation to some erosion that has been occurring there, I'll just ask a question on notice, and I'm not sure if officers can respond, just as to estimated delivery time of that proposed work. I'll just ask if anyone can, if not, get back to me now, just about when that might be something that is actioned for residents who were involved in that consultation, whether that will actually have to go through phase two, or whether that will be delivered as part of an ongoing project.
We'll take that on notice and have that answer supplied to you. Any other comments, Councillor Hewlett?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to... What I was really happy about when I read the Coastal Adaptation Strategy was that a lot of those projects are already in our CapEx, which to me just reiterates how good our officers are in recognising these erosion issues. And it's important in a city with so many, like, people don't realise the cost of dealing with marine infrastructure, with permits. Being a city of, as the Mayor pointed out, with so many, there's a lot of expense, there's state permits, there's so many regulatory things you've got to follow. Things get delayed, which are beyond council's area of power to push forward. But I just want to reiterate, I was really happy to see a lot of the stuff already in the CAPEX. Stuff's already being done in that space. From the recent consultation I did at Wilson's Esplanade, thanked the officers, and it was great that the community got involved and had their say on what they thought would be great for that beach area. I just see more and more people flocking to those sandy beaches, and I just want to thank the council officers for the work they've been doing. Thank you.
Any other comments? Look, just before summing up, I think it's really important. The takeaway from this particular decision today is that we haven't had an overarching policy to guide us with the priorities across the city, because if you don't address those priorities in an orderly fashion, you can actually end up costing the ratepayer a lot more money. So this basically does that, but it also, going on from this, then we can do that community consultation, which many of you have referred to this morning, this afternoon. Once again, more importantly, taking the state and others on this journey, we are also able now to use this information to submit for the Q2100 funding, which the Local Government Association of Queensland has. I'm thinking it's 12 million, is that correct? I don't remember how much a pot of gold is there, but we certainly are well placed now with this information to bid for grant funding to assist us in the next phase and beyond. So good work for the officers, and it has been a long process. We've had state elections that threw things into disarray for a little bit. That's how long it's been going on, but we can finally move forward. So thank you to the officers for their patience, tolerance and commitment to getting this to the last meeting of 2016. If there's no further discussion, I'll hand back to Councillor Boglari to sum up.
I think it's all been said. Thank you.
I'll put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item is 11.4.2. Would you like to move that, Councillor Bishop? Move, Councillor Bishop. Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
Yes. First of all, I'd just like to acknowledge that this has been a part of a long ongoing process for quite a number of, well, many centuries, in fact, given that the Bullard's Farm, which was then owned by the Cottons and various other owners, and now subsequently, most recently, Redland City Council, it's great to see this conservation management plan formalise a pathway forward for this particular site, with some incredibly historical and significant dwellings on it that tell us a lot about the history of exactly what we do every day, which is planning and development, as those early pioneers considered how to actually map the roads that would have been surveyed by Warner, etc. I think it's a good thing to see that we now have a conservation management plan before us. I'd like to acknowledge that this process has gone through an initial phase that I'd like to acknowledge Councillor Tolte, who suggested contacting people from the Birkdale Progress Association, who then went through a process of applying to the Heritage Department for acknowledgement of the house's significance, acknowledged the previous owners of the property, who went through an interruption to their plans. I'd like to acknowledge the state members, the state member for Kapalabar, who was involved with Minister Stephen Miles in creating a stop order that allowed us to go through a process that allowed councillors, with their support, thank you very much, and the Mayor, thank you very much, and officers for the support that's led us to being able to create a conservation management plan to give some clarity and certainty about this incredible history that we can bring to life over the next few years. I'm just going to leave the report, which goes through some very comprehensive suggestions. One of the things that does raise is suggesting that works to be conducted on the site would be best if addressed and guided by heritage architects, and also where possible to make sure that we have people who've done heritage works and who have experience there guiding people who might come onto the site and want to do things there. I think that's an important part of keeping the character of this site, and as we go forward and think about the future use as per the officer's recommendation, allowing partnerships with community organisations and investigating future optional leases over the precinct, I think it's important that those aspects are considered for provenance and heritage clarity, just to make sure that those things are in place. The report says an enormous amount, and I'd just like to acknowledge that as the former divisional councillor for the area, with the changes that came about for my no longer being the divisional councillor for that area, I would appreciate staying involved with the discussions relating to the site, and appreciate all the work that officers have done and that the community will do as a result of the clarity of this document. So, thank you.
Speaker against, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Look, we all love old houses and we love heritage, and certainly strategically that's a great spot for the community down the track. But I've got to say I'm very glad this report's come out now and the residents can actually see what the real cost of the heritage is in the city, and why I didn't support it in the first place and why I won't be supporting this today. Initially, the parcel of land and the property was purchased by council, by ratepayers' money, for $1.45 million without any community consultation, with a commitment of an unknown expense to ratepayers into the future. Now, this motion today goes on to say is about emergency works to the tune of about $208,000. So all of a sudden we're heading towards $1.7 million and not one ratepayer can even set foot into the place yet. Now, the property, yes, it's old. It's 150-year-old. A lot of it has got wood rot. It's got to be replaced. Joists, beams are undersized and not compliant to today's requirements. By the time the work is done on here, this property is going to owe ratepayers $2.5 million, and it won't be a 150-year-old property anymore. 50% of it will be constructed out of new materials. I think we've gone on the wrong path on this one. Sure, I support heritage and I love seeing old homes. That's all great. But a $2.5 million cost to ratepayers, and this is what our residents need to be fully aware of if we're going to go down this path in the future.
Speaker 4, Councillor Boglari.
Speaking about community consultation, at every election, everybody that stands says we're going to protect community values, we're going to protect our heritage. Yes, Councillor Hughes is nodding. I have it thrown at me at every election, and I think that's what our community loves about Redlands. We love what makes us special. We do love our history. And it's interesting, I'm a friend of Ormiston House. I don't think I need to declare a conflict there. But the history of Ormiston House is really amazing too, because in 1957, when the Carmelite nuns bought it, the very short-sighted architect that they had then suggested they bulldoze the house, and that's where they build their monastery. So thankfully, there was a bit of a visionary among the Mother Superior, and she said, no, we're going to save it, we're going to build over to the left where the monastery now is, an amazing piece of architecture if anyone hasn't visited. And the house then, the Friends of Newstead House, because there wasn't any heritage group in Redlands back then, and the Friends of Newstead House took it through to about 1960-something when the Friends of Ormiston House then took it over. That Ormiston House at that stage had trees growing through it. So it was in the same state of disrepair as Willard's Farm is today, if not worse, unfortunately. So it's taken years to get there, and it didn't have state recognition either. At the beginning, it took... I have not been able to actually find out for sure. I've got a historian, yes, looking it up for me, but I think it was the late 60s. So it took nearly 15 years until it actually got that recognition. But imagine if we didn't actually have Ormiston House today. It is absolutely a jewel, not just to Redlands or Queensland, but to our actual nation. It brings so many people to Redlands. And it's not just those who like history or gardens. Jerry Colby Hall from the ABC actually does gardening programs there. Concords from Mercedes, Porsche, Rolls-Royce, vintage cars, they all hold their Concords on that front garden. These are attracting people throughout Queensland and northern New South Wales to this place. And this is under the direction of the nuns. So what we are allowed to do there is really limited, unfortunately. But that just shows, even with those restrictions, how many people it attracts. So imagine if we made Willard's Farm into somewhere where people could go. They can not only learn about history, they could learn about agriculture, and who knows what else could come out of it. It could be an educational facility as well on that land. It's absolutely unlimited. And yes, it is a lot of money, and I agree with that. But if we are going to keep Redlands Redlands, protect our values, have our heritage going forward, we have to have the vision of that Mother Superior back in 1957 and bite the bullet, get the community involved in this. We could do some sort of fundraising. We can get heritage grants. It doesn't all have to come from the ratepayers. But there's a dollar figure there. But what are we going to lose if we don't do this? How do we value that? Absolutely losing a part of Redlands. So I totally support Councillor Bishop, the Birkdale Progress Association, everybody else who's got it to this point, because I know the feeling that Ormiston House gives to nearly 100 volunteers, give their time there. So you can't tell me that heritage isn't highly valued in this community. So totally support this recommendation.
Speaker against, or just a comment? Comment, Councillor Edwards?
Thank you. Regardless of whether this was a support or not, this is a council asset, and I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we do take the emergency actions to prevent deterioration of the buildings, because it is our asset. I really endorse the approach of looking down the future to have partnerships with community organisations, because that's where projects like this best sit. Council is not... The compliance issues alone, what we have to do to the buildings prevents that. So I think this is a good move. It's our asset. We're going to prevent it from deteriorating, and I look forward to those community organisations coming together and moving the management of it from council to them.
Any other speakers? Just might add my comment to this as well, if I may. I think most has been said. I think probably what I would like to highlight, which is where I started in our first item agenda item this morning, in regards to understanding the ongoing challenges we have keeping our financial position in a safe and sturdy place. I think this is a decision we made without a great deal of understanding of the financial commitments that we were making on behalf of the ratepayers. I think there's an opportunity for us to perhaps, you know, deal with this and understand that the actual financial value. I know there's historic value and cultural value. I appreciate that, and that is important. But I think moving forward, we might, because I know there's been similar decisions and there are potentially similar decisions to come, and I think it's important for us to be able to keep a tab, you know, on the checkout as to what that will cost us, so that ratepayers are completely aware and it's transparent. I think Councillor Edwards has summed it up very well. This is now our asset, and we do have to manage it carefully. We will not be able to do what a community organisation could do in making it publicly accessible at the same time retaining its heritage values, because unfortunately as a government body we have certain levels of compliance that they may not have. I would suggest that those levels of compliance didn't happen when Mother Superior took on the challenge of Ormiston House, but certainly we live in a very over-regulated environment when it comes to local government. So that will provide challenges financially, I think, and culturally for us. But I think we need to be very, very careful as to how we make these decisions in the future. And I think we need to let our ratepayers know the actual cost so that they can value it and make value of it. So it's not just about spending the money, but making sure that they understand that investment on their behalf is being made, and so that they can actually make use of that into the future. So today I'll be supporting this. I had concerns when we first adopted this approach because of not having that level of information to make those decisions on behalf of ratepayers. But this is, I think, very diligent of us now to make sure that we've got those remedial works happening in the short term.
before it falls into further a further state of disrepair. So back to Councillor Bishop to sum up, if I would.
Yes, thank you very much. I think everything that everyone has said has merit, and I even acknowledge the approach of Councillor Gleeson of being prudent about our finances. I think we only need to look at our community plan and how many times heritage and historic connections to place appears as one of the very important characteristics that people want enshrined in the work that we do, and as custodians sitting in the seats that I look at that Capalabar Bridge behind us. I look at all these historical photographs, and that bridge was hewn by this man, James Willard, and his South Sea Islander labourers, and there's a whole heap of history and heritage that is yet to be further understood, and this gives us an opportunity to do as Councillor Boglari has suggested and put Redlands on the map in terms of heritage. There is a huge opportunity here. We also have a discussion about the broader balance of land, which was originally all part of the Willard estate, and variously over the years has been constrained in time by various actions from other departments and other uses. I think the way that we consider linkages with other organisations is important, as Councillor Edwards has suggested, and I think our Economic Development Advisory Board will have very interesting things to say, because it's synonymous with all the things that typifies what Redlands has to offer at its best in terms of the past, looking at the present and into the future. I won't take up any more of your time, but I just want to thank everyone involved with supporting this. And as the divisional councillor, Councillor Gleeson, after having made submissions to make sure that that was under your jurisdiction, I do hope that you will uphold
Councillor
the values
Bishop,
of heritage. Yes?
I've asked you to retract that comment, please. It's not related to the item in front of you.
Oh, it absolutely is related to the
Councillor,
item.
Councillor, I ask you to retract that comment. It is not related to the item we're debating. Thank you.
Given that you've asked me to retract it, I will retract that.
Okay. All right. Have you finished summing up now?
But I do ask that Councillor Gleeson as the divisional councillor, represents the values of the community and the overwhelming support that I hope we're about to have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, councillors, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried, carried with the exception of Councillor Gleeson voting in the negative. Thank you. Councillors, the next item on the agenda is the mayoral minute, correct? Which has been distributed to you as discussed yesterday. I'll have it put on the screen for you. Look, I don't actually believe we need to have a formal motion of council on this, but just to make sure that the organisation and the people who work within it have clear direction from all of us, we will formally move this to be our strategic priorities, at least for the next 3.5 years. And certainly it's come after a fair amount of deliberation. We had a two-day session with senior management and all councillors, and this was certainly the areas of agreement, and my understanding at that time it was that everyone certainly agreed that these were important for our community. We'd just come out of an election where voices are often most loudly heard, and there's no doubt that there's not everything that we agree on in this room, but these were certainly the things that consensus was found upon. Subsequent to that, I sent the report out to you councillors and asked for further input. I think I might have done that two times, and I had no further comments, so I assumed at that point that these were the five strategic objectives moving forward, our priorities. And also I think Councillor Boglari, in my absence, discussed it at a councillor meeting where there were no further objections or input identified. So just to make sure that it's very firm in the eyes of the organisation, and we are one team, not just at the political level but across the organisation, we want the spotlight to be on these five particular strategic priorities: transport and connectivity, sports, education and arts, economic development, planning and branding identity, most of which has been talked about in one form or another today. I move the motion in front of me, and if I could, I would just like to speak to it. I don't need a seconder for that.
We'd just like to speak a little further to, because most of these things were already embedded in decisions that Council has made, whether it be through the fact that we've been going through the review of our city plan, which obviously is a big document, it's cost millions of dollars and millions of hours to get to a point where we hope next year to be able to improve on the failings of the previous scheme, and so that is clearly a priority for this organisation and for the city. Similarly, we adopted in our budget this year, and it was unanimously adopted, if I recall correctly, a transport strategy that to be funded, a review of that transport strategy, which fits well and truly with that top priority of transport and connectivity. We also made a decision to look at funding or finding a way to fill the gap of our interconnectivity, internet connectivity in our city, which is a big issue not only for residents but for current businesses and future businesses, and in fact identified as one of the three reasons why businesses depart from Redlands. We have made a decision on that, so once again it's, that has been embedded in a decision. We've also got a decision on the books in regards to looking for further sporting facilities in the city, so this backs that up as well. Economic development, I think just about every one of you have talked about the Economic Development Advisory Board, which has come out of the creation and the endorsement of the Economic Development Framework that we all had in front of us, all those councillors who were here last year, and clearly we're already starting to see the results of that, so we want to keep that focus working with our Economic Development Advisory Board. I've referred to the city plan and planning. Certainly branding and identity is something that's come from the advisory board, and certainly many of us talk about wanting to capture what's really unique about our city and how do we put that into a short space, a short picture, a short name that captures that rather than being referred to as a green leafy Bayside suburb of Brisbane, which often sends our shackles up. So we want to make sure we have our own brand. We've talked about some of those unique features today. So it's fair to say that all of these things have one way or another been captured in decisions of this council or advice that's been provided by others. And once again, just wanting to make sure the whole organisation, as one team, is focused on these objectives. There will be further work required by us to sit down with the executive leadership team to make sure we know what success looks like for each of these priorities, and we intend to do that in the first instance next year. So that's pretty much what the resolution requests, or the recommendation, my mayoral minute requests from you councillors, and I'm happy to have any feedback or perhaps any input that hasn't been received to date despite the fact there's been numerous opportunities. Councillor Bishop had his hand up. Was a comment, Councillor Bishop, or you're a speaker against?
Well, let it suffice as a comment. I understand this came about as a result of your hearing, that I may not have been entirely in support of these five priorities. I don't know how that came about in terms of your awareness. The thing I'd like to make as a comment is that we have a community plan which I don't believe has been revoked and sits as the highest order document in this council in terms of our guiding strategic priorities and alignment with our corporate plan, which is only reviewed in the last year with, as you mentioned previously, comprehensive feedback from officers and the whole organisation, including councillors and community, to give guidance. And in the day that we had this discussion, and I note that councillors did come up with these five strategic priorities, it was not a discussion that was with our ELT, it was a discussion amongst ourselves that these are the five points that clearly are important. But I wonder, the hierarchy, it seems to be that these are the most highest order priorities in the organisation, and I wonder how they sit strategically within the sum total of our other strategic documents. And I don't know that it's been consulted, I'm not sure how it's been integrated, and so they're the concerns that I have. I'd just like to make them as a comment. They sit, and I don't believe that it was ever necessarily suggested in the feedback that we were asked for in terms of the discussion on that day, that this would become the highest order document to send a signal through the council. And it does seem as though that signal has been sent, and so I have some concerns about that, and I know that if the majority of other councillors don't have that view, that's the status quo, and I'll go with that. But I do want to make it clear that in terms of our corporate plan, our community plan, our operational plan, that I don't quite see how this is integrated. And on a one-day discussion, for this to now be sending very strong signals, as you've pointed out in various in the previous item and in the first item of the day, there are consequences, financial consequences, to do with various things, the Economic Development Advisory Board, the tourism plan, the event strategy, the koala management plan, there are the shoreline erosion management plan. I don't quite see how all of these integrate at a time when we're doing our portfolio management office, which I see as a really critical way forward. I can't quite see how this integrates. But I may just be in the outer and on my own on that, and I appreciate you bringing this to get clarity and send the signal to the organisation. Thank you. It's just a comment.
Thank you. Just let me quickly respond, and I'm glad Luke's here for his last meeting. Luke Wallace. Firstly, the Project Management Office, or PMO, deals with operational projects, making sure they're cradle to grave, and they're managed properly with proper business cases and funded. And I don't see the relevance to us as a board, as the leaders in this community, setting the strategic priorities. Can I just perhaps ask Luke Wallace in the back of the room just to identify the relationship this would have to the community plan and to the corporate plan, because my understanding, and the operational plan, my understanding is, in some sense, one way or another, the majority of these items would all be referred to in those documents which have been endorsed by this council and councils prior to us. Luke, can I just get you to confirm that that would be the case? It's also important to note that this doesn't mean that other business as usual doesn't occur. We clearly have an operational plan, and we have a budget that drives the works of this organisation. It doesn't change that. I acknowledge there are other things that we have to do. We're a fairly diverse organisation. We do a lot of things that our community don't even realise we do, and that doesn't prevent that from happening by having a focus on what we have been told by the community through various surveys. And as I think Councillor Boglari said, we get to do a lot of consultation over the course of an election. Certainly many of these things have been raised in that process. So I don't share the concerns that this doesn't line up with all those other documents, and I do believe that as a process, and it was a two-day workshop, if I recall, because it was 2 days that the executive leadership team and councillors put away to make sure that we could find issues of alignment between 11 of us, and that the executive leadership team had a clear understanding as to how they would move forward as an organisation to help build on that. I'll just go around the room first, if I may, Councillor Bishop. And my understanding was that everyone was present at those meetings, at those sessions. I think I've got Councillor Gleeson and then Councillor Boglari, but if that's okay, Councillor Boglari? Councillor Gleeson? I'm sorry.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Totally support the five strategic priorities. We're all in the meeting at the time, and this is what the community did tell us during the election. So I'm happy to see the work get done behind the scene. In relation to financial impacts, at least this is something that we can plan for. It's not something being made up on the run, and we're not committing massive dollars straight away. It would be forecast into future financial years, and look, you touched on all the other corporate plans and all the other plans throughout council, and you did say it, but I'll put it a different way. Clearly, council is a female and can concentrate on more than one thing at a time. It doesn't mean that this is going to prioritise everything else across the council. Other things can be looked at the same time, but these five issues are concerns to the residents and the community, and I think they deserve to have these brought up and looked at.
Councillor Bulgari?
I was just going to say five points came about because we were down at the meeting where we were all brainstorming and we all put up on the board, you know, what we were interested in. So, the Stradbroke Island transitional was up there, events was up there, Simbi, a whole of view for Simbi was up there, conservation was up there, I was just quickly trying to write down here, all the things are up there, like CBD revitalisation, our villages, internet connectivity, tourism was up there, Condamooka country was up there, heritage, Bush Bay Beach, like my T-shirt usually says, was up there. And then there was just this whole mass of things, and we thought, right, what headings do we put them under to make sure something gets done? And then we came up with these, and they very much align with the community plan, which is where I agree totally with Councillor Bishop. The community plan is where we went out to a massive amount of consultation with people across Redlands, and those titles were there. And I can only remember six of them off the top of my head, I'm afraid. So Embracing the Bay was one of them. I think that comes under branding. Wise Planning and Design was one, so that comes under the planning. So all your Simbi and NSI and the Draft City Plan go under there. Health and Wellbeing is another one in the community plan. There's your sport, education and arts. Economic Development is in there, and that's the same title. Community Consultation was in there, and that's like with our event strategy. We've got the Red Team to go out. We've got the Simbi Forum. We've got the NSI groups. I can't remember any of the other community plan titles, if anyone can help me out, but these five are very much in line with that community plan, which is, I think, our core values. But this just says, let's get on with it, let's do it, let's actually deliver what the community plan says. So I'm endorsing this, and it's good to see already out of the transport group that has been formed. They came to see us yesterday, and they're already picking off some low fruit. And some of those projects they discussed yesterday are things which Helen Murray talked to me about. So, that was a while ago, and now they're actually... It was before the war, yep. And so it's great to see that low-picking fruit has already started. So, yep, I'm supportive of this.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. When I was back in the corporate world, one of the things that was always shown was what doesn't get measured tends not to happen or gets less attention to it. So I think that this simple list is more of a thing of demonstrates what are we doing, where are we going, and I see these points as kind of like touchstones where everybody can just go back to simply, does that fall under that, giving the priority? So this isn't world news or anything, but I think it's an important short list that will help the organisation.
And obviously asking it for it to be reported back to us means that we can measure its progress and make sure that it keeps moving, because as many of us have been here a long time, like Councillor Elliott, we have lots of strategies that are written and plans that are created, and unless we're actually being reported on them, they can sometimes fall off the radar. So, and I think the other important point is that obviously we do face challenges with North Stradbroke Island transition. We face challenges with Southern Moreton Bay Island as well, islands, in far as making sure that they've got the adequate infrastructure and transport connectivity of that people expect in the 21st century. And each and every one of these items allows spotlight to be put on those particular areas as well as other areas of the city. I think, Councillor, there's been plenty of discussion. We've had 2 days, and I'm really keen to make sure that we can finish this meeting on time. If it'd be a short comment, you have had a comment already, Councillor Bishop, but a short comment.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that's been said. The five areas that came out during the election are very important. My question is, are they the five that are of the highest priority for this city? Talking to councillors, it seems the process is yes. It's a matter of how has that been integrated and how robust is that. That's the only question that I have, and I'm sure that officers will do their best. And as I know you've mentioned previously, Madam Mayor, in relation to the concerns you have over the community plan as an aspirational document not being fully costed or having projects associated, there's some questions about that. And I see a community plan, which was a statutory document, that was very well consulted, robust, councillors' views, officers' views, community's views, all very important, integrated, statutory, same with our corporate plan. This Councillor Boglari suggested the process. It was a range of things. These were the ones at the end of the day that were the highest order, but the process wasn't necessarily as robust as I would like to think, and consulted with the community. That's just my views, and just putting that out there. Thanks.
The operational plan does drive through to the budget, which would highlight the costs of it. So, and this was consensus on the day. So I want to make sure on behalf of people sitting around the room that the organisation doesn't get a mixed message. Today is that opportunity to do that. So with that, councillors, I will put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried with Councillor Bishop voting in the negative. Thank you. Moving on to the next part of our agenda, I haven't been advised of any notices of motion or any urgent business without notice. We do have two items in closed session. Are we required to go into a closed session? Are there any further questions required? You're happy to... So Councillor Elliott is moving item 16.1.1 and seconded by Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 16.2.1, Delegated Authority, Waste Transfer Station. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillors, just before I close the meeting, if I could just take this opportunity once again to farewell Luke and Nick, and also on behalf of councillors, wish all the staff, the team, a very Merry Christmas, a safe one, and to those members in the public gallery, those who come occasionally and those who come all the time, thank you for your interest in Redland City Council and local government, and we wish you and your family a very merry, happy, joyful Christmas, and we look forward to working with you and for you in 2017. Thank you. Meeting closed at 1 minute past one. Just. No, it was 1 minute past one when I said it.